Greetings, Robert. Welcome to Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
As remembered to the best of their abilities by Carrie and Emmy. Yay.
Yay. this is likely going to be part one of
two? Perhaps?
Yeah. Let's go with two.
We'll see how far we get.
Yeah.
I think it depends on, like, the amount of outside references we make. And,
how
like,
many,
side stories.
How many Jesus jokes get
how
told?
How many Jesus jokes?
And you're like, oh my gosh, I saw this thing on the internet?
Exactly.
Right.
So, like, if we stuck to straight plot,
right,
we could probably get through this rather quickly, but that wouldn't be fun at
right.
all.
Right. Who cares about straight plot?
Right.
If you want to do straight plot,
then read the book.
Good.
Already.
Our story begins, as it often does, on Privet Drive.
Yes.
With Harry Potter. Oh! We should tell him.
What should we tell him?
I don't know if we've told Robert yet.
We should definitely tell him. I don't think... We may have mentioned it, but I don't think we made it clear.
No,
I definitely don't think it's clear enough.
I don't think so.
And, yeah. We should definitely...
I feel like it's reasonably important. So we should cover
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
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 So, Harry Potter...
He's an unusual young boy.
And a very unusual young boy.
Yeah.
Particularly because he has a lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead.
On his forehead. Yeah.
I don't remember how it opens on Privet Drive.
So, I believe
Okay.
Harry wakes up because of his scar.
Yes, he does! Oh my gosh, good
his
memory.
Thank you. His scar is burning. This lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead that I'm not sure we've mentioned enough times.
No.
Harry wakes up in the middle of the night, it's burning,
mm-hmm.
and he's trying to remember the dream he was having.
But there's a whole prologue.
Right, that's the issue. Is that...
Should we cover the
prologue? It actually starts off with the dream.
Okay, that's fine. So, the dream that Harry's been having, we will now tell you.
Yes.
In the dream, there is this house out in the English countryside known as the Riddle House. Belonged to a family named the Riddles. Parents and then a son named Tom. Tom was very handsome, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
But never married.
Never married. Wait, are we talking about Tom Sr.?
Tom Sr., yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Sr. also never married.
Right, but also handsome. And
oh,
like,
yeah, I guess you're right.
And
the
word that's it starts with a C, I can't think of it.
Cunning?
Charming.
Charming.
That's the word.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, like, chivalrous?
You're right.
No.
Nope.
Yeah, no, he's, like, attractive to
Yeah, charming. You're absolutely right. Or charmingly attractive.
Or charmingly attractive. Either way.
Right,
I think it goes
both
ways. But yeah, Tom...
Riddle
is a muggle.
They're all muggles. I mean...
It's like a regular muggle town.
It's a normal town. About 50 years ago?
That'd be a little longer than that.
You're right.
Because the Chamber of Secrets was opened 50 years before that,
oh, right.
so it'd be
yes.
like
so,
60-ish.
Okay, about 60-ish years
They're
ago.
Old.
Yeah, about 60-ish years ago, the Riddle House, which was inhabited by Mr. and Mrs. Riddle and their son Tom,
yep,
was one morning.
Wait, I can't do it.
I can't take the pressure, Carrie!
You've been in meetings all day. Give yourself a break. Forgive yourself, Emmy.
Oh.
I know.
I'm gonna have a little reconciliation with myself here while you save it.
So, okay, I kind of screwed up because I think it happened actually about 40 to 50 years ago because I think it's after he...
Does it?
Yeah.
Because I think it's a young boy that they see. Or like a teenage boy.
Right.
So it could be either...
But I'm thinking it's like 50-ish years ago.
All right, around the same time.
Because he would have been born like 60 years
ago,
is what I was thinking.
Oh,
but...
yeah, and I was thinking of the death.
Right.
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 Spoiler.
Spoiler alert to like now. So,
right.
The Riddle House, Frank.
You're amazing.
I know, right? No, okay.
Guys.
I think he might have a last name, but I don't remember what it is. But his first name
either.
Is definitely Frank.
Frank.
I really hope
the
that's
The caretaker.
Right. Yeah.
Okay,
so... Does he find them?
Yes, he does.
So he goes to the Riddle House and Okay, so there's this Riddle House. Yep. Frank is the caretaker.
It's a mansion.
It's a mansion. Yeah. They're super rich, and, like, they look good and stuff.
Yeah. Frank, the caretaker and groundskeeper.
Yeah. He walks up to the house doing whatever.
Yeah.
You know, groundskeeper type things. And he notices that it's a little, things.
You know, dark and quiet.
Yeah, I think the door might be ajar, but oh, I could yes. be wrong on that.
I think you might be right, actually.
So he walks in and sees the Riddles dead on the floor. Three of them.
Yep.
The mother, father, and the son.
Yep. All dead.
All dead. With a shocked expression on their face.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, looking fine.
Yeah.
You know?
No bullet holes.
No bullet holes, no stab wounds, no poison.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody in the town assumes that Frank did it.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of creepy and a loner.
Right.
And, but then the autopsy reports come back and the doctors cannot explain how the Riddles died.
Right. They're like, all of their hearts just stopped.
Right.
Simultaneously.
And they, you know, they all comment on, you know, well, they have this look of fright on their face, but you can't die of fright.
Right.
Right. This is called dramatic irony, where the reading audience knows more than the characters in the story because of previously obtained information.
Thank you for that lesson.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
English professor's daughter, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, I was an English major, so.
Right.
Yeah, there's that.
I should call you Mario, because I just got one-upped.
But I feel like an English professor, though, knows more than, like, a Bachelor of Arts.
Right, but I think it would go, like, English professor... Bachelor of Arts in English, English professor's daughter on the bottom rung. And now I have okay. the song Coal Miner's Daughter stuck in my head.
That's amazing.
I had a country face.
I had a little bit of
a classic face. Country face. Like, none of this...
Dude, still... Like
Patsy Cline classic country
yes!
face.
Yes!
Yes!
Yes! Walking After Midnight and I
oh
Find
God,
the Pieces.
Oh my God, that's exactly the song!
Oh my God! It's so good. Robert, you should look up, is it just Walking After Midnight?
Walking After Midnight. I think it's with an apostrophe. I think it's Walking
I think so. Walking After Midnight. I also really enjoy I Fall to Pieces, and I feel like there should be, like, a punk rock cover of that, because it would be awesome.
It'd be and so amazing.
Right?
How good are you in guitar?
Not super good. Okay. We should try totally to do it out, because it would be amazing.
We have Garage Band. We can make this work.
Oh my God. That'd be so awesome.
Project Post Podcast. Okay.
Also, Johnny Cash kind of rocks. Just anything Johnny Cash.
Anything.
Oh. It doesn't even matter. He could read me the phone book and I'd be like, alright.
So, speaking of falling to pieces and going out walking after midnight, the only... although Frank has been accused of the Riddles' murder, wherein they're in, you know, they're selves fall to pieces. digging a hole here.
But they didn't actually fall.
The only thing there, you know, everybody in the town assumes that Frank did it, but because the police can't prove how they were killed, they can't arrest Frank for it. So he stays on as caretaker. You know, I'm assuming they have some sort of endowment or some sort of trust fund.
Right.
And several families move in and out of the Riddle House over the next 50 years, and no one ever really stays very long.
And then it gets abandoned for, like, a while.
Yes.
And it kind of starts falling apart because Frank's getting old and he can't really...
Teenagers, like, break in and...
Yeah. Teenagers break in all the time, like, mess stuff up.
Yeah. So
I believe Frank has an injury from, like, the war.
Yeah, he limps.
Yeah,
Or walks with a cane.
Yeah, something like that.
So, one night, Frank awakens in the middle of the night in his little cottage off of the main house and looks towards the house and sees that there's a light flickering in one of the windows. It's like, those damn kids.
Never mind. I was going to make a...
You meddling kids?
You meddling kids joke, but I was like, there's nothing for them. Like, he wouldn't have gotten away with anything. And then
I would have lived a quiet and peaceful life if it weren't for you meddling kids.
Thank you. Thank you for just forcing it to work.
Great fact about Scooby-Doo is that it proves that all monsters are actually... The worst monsters are humans.
That's true.
Which is a really good statement about life. And a good theological statement, too.
That is a good theological statement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Theology of mid-90s cartoons.
Good times.
Yeah.
That should also be some sort of curriculum.
Ren and Stimpy would be a whole... I don't know what you would do.
I mean...
You'd have to include Ren and Stimpy, though, because that really kind of changed the way that we look at cartoons, because it became sort of moved into the adult segment, in a way.
Right, but isn't that more of The Simpsons?
That's very true. People have already done the gospel according to Simpsons.
They have.
Which is easy, because it's amazing.
I am actually reading that right now.
Are you really?
And Robert brought it for me.
Aww.
It was all like the free section.
Robert's
of the bookstore.
So great.
Right? I got way too excited. I started
Robert is a prince among men.
He is.
I think this should be clear.
Prince among men.
A prince among men.
Anyway.
Fire.
Where were we? Okay, so there's a light in the Riddle House.
Yep.
So Frank's like, you meddling kids. That's where we were.
Meddling
okay.
kids. Right. There we go. So got it back.
So he goes limping up to the house.
Yeah.
And okay. he hears these weird noises coming from the...
Yeah.
From a room.
Some voices.
Some voices. And he's like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then instead of like going to the door and being like, what are you guys doing here? He decides to just eavesdrop on them.
Right.
And it's one, I believe, a high-pitched
mm-hmm.
voice. And then there's two other...
Just one.
Oh, there's just one other voice?
It's just one.
Oh, yep. I thought older dude was there, too.
Who's the other dude?
The...
Carcass?
No. Bernie Cross Jr.?
And it's only in the movie.
Okay. So that's only in the movie. So, yeah. Okay, so it's Voldemort and Wormtail.
Yeah.
Screw
short,
it.
Short, yeah. Dramatic irony revealed. It's Voldemort and Wormtail.
So, okay.
Clearly Voldemort's giving instructions to Wormtail. So the
yes.
low raspy voice is giving instructions to the more high-pitched sort of rat-like voice.
I thought Voldy's was kind of high-pitched too, isn't it?
Oh,
that?
Maybe, yeah, because he's wounded or whatever.
Because I just remembered, okay,
yeah.
So side story already. Well, there's like four of them already,
yeah.
But...
Drink every time there's a side story.
Right. So, you know, have you seen the new Sherlock series on BBC?
I have, with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yeah.
I have not.
Okay, well, A, it's excellent, so watch it.
Okay.
And B, it's also, like, I think on Netflix. So.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And B, so, I really like Sherlock Holmes. Like, I like the stories and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like,
I was like, you're, like, one of those Benedict Cumberbatch people.
No.
Because he looks like the...
I don't find him all that attractive.
He's like the meerkat from Ice Age.
Yeah!
That's exactly what he looks like.
Oh my gosh, that is exactly what he looks like. I'm gonna start calling him Sid.
Yep. Thank you for remembering the name. You're amazing!
It's really gross how, like, pop culture things can stick in my head, but you tell me something I'll need to know and like,
doesn't matter.
Won't know it.
It's okay. You know what Back to the Future is. That's important.
Right. That's important. And I knew that Bill Clinton was president.
Do you know the two changes that Marty McFly makes in Back to the Future besides helping his parents get together? Two changes that he makes to history.
I feel like I do, but I can't.
He introduces Johnny B. Goode.
Oh, yeah. I knew that one.
And he encourages the custodian at the cafe
to become mayor. Yeah.
So, basically, Marty McFly goes back in time to kick off the civil rights movement.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I will become mayor. Also, side note on that. No, we've gone too far. Okay, so, so anyway, new Sherlock.
Yes.
I really enjoy the Sherlock stories. And so the main, like, foe to Sherlock is Moriarty, right?
Right.
So, in my reading of Moriarty, I always think of him as having, like, a really deep, like, voice that's just like, you know, like, he's
okay.
a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, deep, raspy,
right.
angry voice.
Sitting in a swiveling chair, stroking an evil furry cat. Yeah.
Right. So, I always thought of that. But in this new Sherlock one,
mm-hmm.
Moriarty has, like, a high-pitched, like, almost, like, not, like... obnoxiously.
Sure.
But it's a higher voice.
Oh, funny. Okay.
And so I'm like, like, that's not the Moriarty that I think of. But I was talking to a friend about it, and she was like, yeah, but I find the high-pitched man's voice is more out of place, and therefore creepier to me.
That's true.
So, relating this back to Harry Potter.
Yes, I'm following you.
So Voldemort having a more higher-pitched voice than, like, a low, traditional bad guy voice,
yeah.
air quotes.
Yep.
I find creepier.
Yeah, I'll
agree
with
that.
Than
he has a high-pitched voice.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to describe his voice. I mean, that he has in the movie, it's just sort of, like, raspy,
yeah.
snake-like.
Snake-like, which is
anyway,
good.
It's
I
Voldemort.
I love Ralph Fiennes.
And I know, he's so good.
So good. So good.
So good.
So good.
So it's Voldemort and Wormtail, and they're discussing that Voldemort's not very strong yet, and they clearly have a plan about something coming up, and they're gonna kill somebody. Yep. And Frank is standing out in the hallway being like, what the hell? Because they're also talking about, like, muggles and Quidditch, and Frank is a muggle and has never heard of these things because muggles aren't supposed to know about the Wizarding World.
Right.
So he's like, what the heck? And then Frank's about to, I think, leave and go call the police.
Yep.
And a giant-ass snake slithers towards him. And he's like, well, gonna die. But the snake actually just passes him right by and goes in the room. And then there's some hissing. And then Voldemort tells Wormtail that there's apparently a human listening outside. And so they bring Frank in and they sort of... Basically, they just sort of mentally torture him. Like, they tell him they're going to kill him. And he tries to sort of save his own life and he can't do it. And then they...
Yeah.
Then there's a flash of... And then, you know, something in the chair... He gasps with horror at whatever's in the chair.
Right.
So we're meant to know that Voldemort apparently looks absolutely atrocious right now.
Yes.
In comparison to, you know, when he was sticking out the back of a guy's head, when he looked great. I mean,
he looked like a cover girl then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Easy breezy beautiful.
Maybe he's born with it. Turin Maybe girl. It's Horcrux.
Yes.
Maybe it's pure evil.
You know, I hear pure evil. It's good for the skin.
It really is.
Whoa. It's like...
Do I have my windows closed?
Yes. I don't know. I'm going to open my window. Like, without open my window. I'm going to open the shades.
Do it. That is some serious rain coming down.
Wow. That's intense.
Excellent. Well, that makes sense because we just had Frank killed.
That's true.
The universe is weeping.
The universe is weeping over the death of Frank.
It's true.
Also, so then, are we done with that scene?
Kind of? I think so, yeah.
Okay, so then Harry wakes up. The authorities, I think, later find Frank with the same shocked face and can't explain his death.
Yeah.
And then you realize that the Riddles were killed by a Vada Kedavra.
If you hadn't kind of guessed that already.
Right. I'm just saying it's kind of a cool, like, dramatic part in the book where they're like, Frank was killed the same way that he was accused of killing. I don't know.
Well, he's sort of, like, vindicated in death.
Right. Which is kind of sad, but
I know.
He's kind of a creepy old man.
He really was.
Yeah.
He and Filch would have gotten along.
They would have. Oh, maybe a fun, like, team.
Right.
I wonder if he would have gotten an animal sidekick.
He should have had an animal sidekick.
He should have.
I feel like he would have had, like, a little turtle eating limp lettuce. Like, something very easy to care for.
Right.
So, Harry has now awakened from a dream where he's sort of, like, seeing that scene.
Yes.
In his dream.
And he woke up because there was pain on his forehead, upon which there is a lightning bolt-shaped scar. And it's the scar that is burning.
Harry then scrambles for his glasses, which he wears.
Over his green eyes.
Oh, yeah, he has green eyes.
He does.
It's very important. And kind of musses up his hair, his untidy black hair.
His untidy black hair.
I think this is the last book where J.K. makes sure that we know exactly what Harry looks
like. I think
so after
too.
This, her editor was like, all right, that's enough.
We know who Harry
We're
Potter
gonna
is.
We're going to assume if they made it through book four that they know.
Yeah, because I read book five, or I was like skimming book five again the other day, and I don't think they pay as much attention to it.
So, Harry is now, it's Harry's concern that his scar is hurting, because the only time his scar has ever hurt before is when he's been in the presence of Voldemort.
Yes.
And he's like, well, Voldemort can't...
He can't be here. Privet Drive. That's insane.
Yeah. And, you know, he's, like, hiding somewhere in Albania, apparently was the last report. And, so he's like, maybe I should ask, like, who will I ask?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't
want
to bother
this?
Dumbledore. He imagines, I think, writing a letter to Dumbledore, like, Dear Professor Dumbledore, my scar hurt. Hope you've had a nice summer. And
Love
so then
Harry.
He's like, maybe I'll talk to my best friends, Ron and Hermione. And he's like, Hermione would just say, oh, Harry, that's terrible. Let's send a letter to Madame Pomfrey, and until then, we'll go to the library. And he's like, yep, that's Hermione.
Yeah.
Consult a teacher, and until you hear from the teacher, consult a book. And then Ron, he realizes, would just be like, oh, Harry, well, that's weird, but your scar didn't hurt, and except when you are around Voldemort, right? Well, I'll ask Dad. Maybe Scar is always hurt. And so there's this line in the book where Harry says he really wishes he had a father to talk to.
Yeah.
And that's when he's like, aha, I have one.
I met that dude for 20 minutes that time.
That one dude that I totally bonded with because we both hate Snape.
I've known him for like 3 hours.
Doesn't matter.
And I already trust him with my life.
Yep. So he sends a letter to Sirius, and he can send a letter to Sirius because now that he's told his horrible aunt and uncle and cousin about Sirius Black, the notorious killer who's his godfather, they're letting him have his magic books and stuff. So he has Hedwig, he has his quill, he has his parchment, he can send a letter and say, Sirius, my scar hurt, and I'm kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
The next day.
Which I think he actually disguises in case it gets intercepted. So it's Dear Padfoot.
No, I think that comes later. I think they're still calling him Sirius.
Oh, maybe he says then, like, hey, maybe you guys shouldn't call me by my real name.
Yeah.
Also, I did a typing motion. He did not have a computer.
No.
They don't have computers.
Would have been more efficient.
Would have.
Texted him.
Quick email.
Sirius. This is Sirius business.
This is Sirius business. That would have been an amazing way to communicate with Sirius, like, without wizards knowing. Just use Muggle technology.
Perfect!
Get him a cell phone! No one's gonna check
Get
that.
Get him a burner
Get
cell?
Get him a Gmail account!
Sirius.black@gmail.com.
Here's an instant email. Sirius.black@gmail.com.
Yep.
What's up? How is wherever exactly you are.
Right.
Because no one is going to check this because we're stuck with quills.
Yep.
Anyway.
We found a lot of ways around the wizarding world.
You really have. Yeah.
So, Harry sends off the letter. And, is it the, like, the... And then he just waits.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know, like, Hedwig will... somehow owls know how to find wherever the person is.
Yeah.
But it takes a while, obviously. If they're far away. And so... I don't know. Then he just waits.
I think he just waits.
Does his homework.
And then, well, the letter.
Right.
Then
the letter
comes. Happen.
The phone call happens first, I think.
Yeah.
So, do you want to do the phone call?
Well, I feel like you'll have a better phone call voice.
Oh, okay. So, one day.
The phone rings.
The phone rings. And I do believe Vernon Dursley picks it up.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, hello or whatever.
Yeah. Ahoy, hoy.
I was just going to say that.
Are you serious?
Yes, I was just going to say, originally, what we were supposed to say when we picked up the phone.
Ahoy, hoy.
Hello, friends. Okay. But so Vernon picks up the phone, and he says hello, as one does.
Right.
And Harry can hear, because he's in the same room, someone is shouting into the phone, hi, can you hear me? This is Ron Weasley. I'm a friend of Harry Potter's from school. And Vernon, like, freaks out, slams down the phone. I think he says, there's no one by that name here. And slams down the phone and is, like, hollering at Harry, like, how dare you have your friends call here? And, of course, you know, Ron doesn't know how to work a phone, so he thinks you have to yell.
Yeah.
Because he assumes it's Muggle technology. It doesn't work.
Right. Which sometimes
it
doesn't.
Well, that's fair. So, no more phone calls from Ron that summer. But then a letter comes in the mail.
Which I think Harry, I think Harry's all sad because, like, they won't call back. And then he says, like, I think Harry says at that point that he's pretty sure Ron also told Hermione not to call.
Yes.
And Harry's like, Hermione would have known how to freaking call me.
Hermione would have been like, oh, hello, Mr. Dursley. I've heard so much and so many lovely things about you. She would have figured out how to handle it.
She totally would have.
But they've been sending letters by owl, I think.
I can't remember. I think they have.
Yeah.
So,
the postman comes to the door one day with a letter. Doesn't just leave it in the slot, wants to talk to Vernon about it.
Yeah.
Because the entire envelope is covered, every single inch of it, except for one square inch on the front, is covered in stamps.
Yeah. The one square inch containing the address for the Dursleys.
Yes.
For Privet Drive.
Just crammed in there.
Surrey.
In little, wow.
Sick.
You are
it's
on
really, it's
point.
Bad. Thank you. P. Sherman, 42, while I'll be waiting. Cindy. Anyway. So they get this letter, And in it, it's from Arthur, I believe.
I think it's from Arthur Molly.
Or Molly. I can't remember. Molly. Okay, it's Molly. So Molly Weasley writes and says, like, I think it's to the Dursleys. Mr. and Mrs. Dursley, my name is Molly Weasley. I'm a friend, or I'm the mother of a friend of Harry's from school. We have tickets to this very intense sporting event that's going on.
Right.
And we would like to bring Harry along.
Yep.
If that would be cool with you guys.
Yep.
Please let us know or something.
By the regular way.
By the regular way, yeah, because I don't think a letter has ever been mailed. Or has
I don't think she even says.
The postman has never come to... Something about never coming to the borough.
Has she said
that? Yeah.
She said that? Okay.
Like, she says something about, like, no postman has ever come to the borough. Or no something.
Okay. I don't remember. I believe you, though.
And then she says... So, the regular way meaning the owl way. And then there's one other thing that I find really funny, but I can't. I just had it. She says, hopefully this binds you. I sure hope we put enough stamps on it. Like, the whole letter is covered in stamps.
And Vernon is so pissed.
Because, as you may recall, the Dursleys like things to be normal. Like, just run-of-the-mill, completely normal, you know.
Little boxes on the hillside.
Precisely. I wonder if Petunia is secretly a drug dealer.
Oh my gosh. I would totally buy that.
Because she seems like kind of a...
She's a stay-at-home mom.
She's enough of a bored housewife.
Yes.
To start...
Yes. Like, you're thinking Weeds.
Yeah, I'm thinking Weeds.
Obviously. Oh, because the song.
See,
when I sing Little Boxes, I think of church camp.
What?
I went to an Episcopal church camp. We were a little unusual. We actually had a Harry Potter VBS.
Okay, one thing at a time. I mean,
we sang Little
Boxes. Can we start? Why did you sing Little Boxes?
Because it's a commentary on consumerist society and like fitting yourself into a box,
right?
And that like, and so the emphasis being that Episcopalians sing a lot of like 60s and 70s songs, like we're gonna fight the man and like work for social justice. They're really sweet.
That's awesome.
I really, really love them. I miss them sometimes.
My mother always said we would make good Episcopalians.
They're good people.
But that's because my dad is Catholic, my mom's Lutheran.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be a good blend.
Catholics are very happy with Episcopalians. But yeah. So we would sing Little Boxes on the Hillside around the campfire.
Okay, wait a second.
Yeah.
Now we need to just quickly touch on Harry Potter VBS.
Yeah, so in 2003 when we had the General Convention at the Minneapolis Convention Center, which was... Gene Robinson, the first openly gay bishop, had been elected.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to have, like, this whole big thing where we voted as a church whether we were going to allow this. So a bunch of protesters showed up to be dicks about it. And so they were like, well, we can't have the kids on site. We have to take them off site. So to keep the kids distracted from all of this terrible stuff going on, we decided to have a VBS. Harry Potter was super big right then, so we decided to have a Harry Potter Book 1 VBS. So we just wrote our entire VBS around it, and we had, like, stations, and we had, like, we just integrated it with the Jesus story. We, like, all of us wore graduation gowns all week so that we'd look like professors. We had a guy who wore a turban and was Professor Quirrell, and all of the kids who'd read the books were, like, legit afraid of him, and it was adorable. I ran a station that had a Sorcerer's Stone. And, like, I think it was, like, some sort of, you know, like, you do the cool chemistry thing with kids where, like, you know, it's just, like, a basic chemical reaction, but, like, they've never seen it before, so it's like, ooh.
Right.
I don't remember what it was. But, yeah, we had a Harry Potter VBS.
That's awesome.
You know, at the same time that everyone else in America is like, burn the Harry Potter books, it's all witchcraft. The Episcopalians are like, we should do a VBS. And that's Episcopalianism in a nutshell.
That's amazing.
They're good people.
I went to Wartburg College, and we always call it Hogwarts.
Yes.
And on graduation day, when we got our robe, we were all like...
Yeah.
Yelling about Gryffindor and stuff. Good times. So they get the letter.
Yep.
And then they'll say that they'll, come to pick Harry up at whatever time.
At 5 o'clock on Sunday.
I was gonna say, I think it was 5 o'clock. I couldn't remember the day, though.
I don't remember either, but Ron, I think, sends a letter to Harry by owl that says, like, look, we're coming to get you no matter what the muggles say.
We're going to get you no matter what the muggles say, yeah. So.
Just be ready.
Be ready. So, Harry gets ready. Oh, and Molly says that then after this big sporting event,
yeah.
Harry can just stay with them.
Yeah, because this is like early to mid August.
Yeah, so yeah. She's like, we won't return them to you suckers.
Yeah.
So then they come to, or so it comes to the day. Harry is all packed up, and it gets to be 5 o'clock.
I forgot about this.
Yeah, it gets to be 5 o'clock, and they haven't showed up.
No.
And the Dursleys are pissed because they like things normal and neat and tidy and on time.
Yep.
And so they're like, where are they? Like, was this just some kind of joke or prank or something? And Harry's like, well, this is sad because I was really excited for this, but whatever. And it gets to be later and later. I don't remember how long they wait.
I don't think it actually gets that late. Like, it's just, it's like 5:10 or something.
Oh, really? I thought it was like a good like 5:30.
Mm-mm.
Huh. Well, then never mind. So they wait for like 10 minutes.
Wasn't in the book. Anyway.
Hmm. Well, that this whole part isn't in the movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So then they hear, I think they hear a loud bang.
Yeah.
And then, from their living room, and then there's all these voices coming through the wall.
Yep.
By the fireplace.
Yep. And by the fireplace, which has been blocked up.
Which has been blocked
up. And has an electric fireplace in front of it.
Yeah. So they're hearing all this, like, jumbling and, like, voices, and there's, like, ow, Fred, your elbow, and
yeah,
stuff
go
like
back,
that.
Go back, something's
go back, wrong. Go back, something's wrong. And then, I believe, Arthur yells to the wall that everyone should stand back.
Yes, exactly.
And then he blows up the wall.
Yep.
Of the,
covers the whole room
covers
plaster
the whole does. Room in plaster. The Dursleys are just, like, shocked and pissed.
And all of these red-haired men
and
are climbing
all of
out
these
of the
red-haired
floor.
Men come crawling out of their fireplace and like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. And what happened was, Mr. Weasley, had the fireplace that's in Privet Drive connected to the flue network. Now, if you remember from book two, flue powder is what you throw into a fireplace and then you can step into it, say where you want to go, and it like brings you there via fireplace. So they hooked up the Muggle fireplace for just a short while to the flue network so that they could get there, pick up Harry, and bring him back. Now, they did not know that the fireplace was taken out and an electric bomb put in because they don't even know what electricity is.
Right.
And so once they got there, it was blocked off and they were all trapped in the wall. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Arthur bursts through. And then I think he starts talking to Mr. and Mrs. Dursley, like, trying to, like, calm them down.
Yes. Well, he's really excited to meet them.
He's
like,
super
oh,
excited because they're
you're
muggles. And he's so stoked that like, he has muggles to talk to. And they're horrified by this whole thing. And barely even talking. Fred and George are also there. They drop some candy.
Right. They say, we'll go upstairs and we'll get your stuff, Harry. And then, like, as they're hauling things down, one of them drops the...
Some candy.
Drop something, and then, his pocket explodes with candy, and then they're, like, trying to pick them all up, and they're, oh, I'm so sorry, we're making a mess.
Right. So then they try and pick up all the candy and put it back in their pockets, and then I think they leave.
Yep.
I think Ron leaves, too.
Yep. It's just Arthur and Harry.
It's just Arthur and Harry. And then Dudley, should we just go there? Like, I remember.
Well, I mean, there's this awkward moment where, like, Arthur's like, well, say goodbye to Harry, and they're all like, oh.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because like, Arthur has no idea how much how badly they treat Harry. So there's it's just very, very awkward.
Just super awkward. Because, like Arthur is expecting those tearful, like, hugs.
Yeah, right.
Like, see you in a
year.
Because
the Weasleys are such a great family.
The Weasleys are such a great family. Like, one of the best.
Yeah.
In all of literature.
Yeah. There's lots of their...
They're so loving, but yet there's rules.
Yes.
You know, like...
Boundaries.
There's rules, there's boundaries, there's love and hugs and laughter.
Wow. I'm sorry. That's amazing.
That was bad. So then Harry's like, well, see you guys.
Yep.
They're like, catch you later.
Yep.
So
Arthur's trying to figure this out, and then all of a sudden, Dudley claps his hands over his mouth.
Yes.
But he can't contain the fact that his tongue... is growing.
His tongue is swelling, like, out of his mouth.
Yes.
And just, like, super gross.
Vile.
Yeah. So, the Dursleys start freaking out, and they must be so sick of magic. Like, it is they have such love for their son, like, obnoxious, overpowering love.
Exactly.
And magic keeps fucking with him.
Right, because he's gotten the tail the first year, and now he's getting...
This now he's getting a giant tongue.
And Arthur's shouting about, like, oh, it's a, my son's making these trick candies. Yeah. I'll put him right. And he's just like, Harry, just go.
He's like, Harry, go. And then the Dursleys are yelling at him, like, don't touch my son. I think, yeah. Like, don't do any magic. And Arthur's like, no, but I can fix it. And they're, yeah. like, freaking out because magic
also,
has already
the living room is still covered in plaster dust.
Living room still completely screwed up. So
bricks
I think
everywhere.
So I think Harry leaves and then, like, but he's laughing at just the sight of just the upheaval that the Dursleys are in.
It's just delightful for him. Yeah. Considering that they're awful to him. So he gets to the burrow. And Fred's like, hey, did he eat it?
Did he eat it?
He's like, what was that? And they're like, it's a ton
toffee.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a ton. All right, kid, don't hurt yourself.
Remix.
All right, kid.
Sit down before you hurt yourself. And Harry's like, yeah, it totally worked. It was hilarious.
And they're like, we're so glad because we've been inventing, like, yeah. I don't remember exactly what they say, but Molly Weasley walks in on this and is like,
what did you guys do to that poor boy?
Exactly. And there's a lot of yelling.
Yep.
So, Ron's like, Harry, let's go up to your room. And Harry's like, oh, hey. I think Hermione's also there.
Hermione is there.
Because she's going with him to the Quidditch World Cup.
Yep.
And,
oh, by the way, the large sporting event.
Yes, is the Quidditch World Cup.
Is the Quidditch World Cup, which is just as exciting as the, like, soccer World
FIFA
Cup.
FIFA
World Cup to everyone but America.
So, in a lot of ways, the Dursleys are in the same sort of situation.
Still the Dursleys.
Still American.
Still American. Through and through. They bleed red, white,
and
blue.
So,
which doesn't really work, because that's also the, anyway.
The colors of Britain, yeah. Right. Actually, I think red, white, and blue, like, can be found in every single, one of those colors can be found in every single flag.
Yeah.
Except for one African one, I think.
Oh, yeah, isn't there one that's just, like, black, green, and yellow?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
I think that's Ethiopia, but now I'm going to be on record saying that. And everybody's going to be like, wow, you're a terrible person.
We're
you
Americans.
Don't
we don't
flags.
Know geometry or flags. Geometry? Also geometry, apparently.
First recovery. So.
Wow. Okay.
Hermione's staying with them. I feel like Hermione and Harry and Ron all sleep in the same room.
I thought Hermione was sleeping with Ginny.
Oh, yeah.
I think she spends a lot of time in Ron's room with her, with he and,
yes.
With he and Harry. Mm-hmm. But I believe she goes to Ginny's room then.
I think you're probably right. So,
let's not have purple in here.
That also reminds me of Episcopal Church camp.
Yep. Well, Lutheran church camp, but...
No, because at Episcopal Church camp, somebody said, boys are red, girls are blue, no purple. And one of the leaders said, you know, that's a very binary way of understanding sexuality, so we're not going to use that here.
That is amazing!
Yeah, Episcopalians are the best people ever.
That is so awesome. Ours is always like, girls are pink, boys are blue, and there is no purpling. And I was like, do pink and blue really make that... Like,
it would make
there's
like
no
a,
lavendering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, I've always had, like, a lot more guy friends. I was like, damn it, I have to hang out with all these girls. And like,
to be fair, I have busted several purpling situations in my life as a youth minister.
I'm sure you have.
Where I'm just like, nothing really awkward, but like, hi, this is a closed door and you're a boy and a girl. You can leave now.
Yeah. See, we were, like, in, like, groups watching a movie.
Oh, okay. Well, you can still get in trouble there, too.
I know. I think one time... Oh, no, one time we, like, thought people were going to come in, so we, like, freaked out, and then they just, like, kept walking by, and we were like, all right. Anyway.
Wait, were you watching a movie with just one other person?
No, there's like, a group of us,
oh,
but it was,
okay.
like, a bunch of boys and girls together, and it was at, like, 11 p.m., and
oh my gosh.
We were probably watching Harry Potter, which they would have burned that DVD, so,
yep.
And not, like, a copy, they would have.
Yeah.
You melted it.
Extinguish it.
Right.
So
anyway, where are we? By the way, the other day I was doing homework and I put on that the sound thingy. And I was just like, I'm in the Hufflepuff common room.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing stuff. Which I probably should have put like Ravenclaw because I was studying, but.
Yeah. Well, Hufflepuffs are hardworking though.
They are. And loyal.
Yep.
I appreciate them. Anyway, we've gotten really off track, and I don't remember where we are.
Usual. So Ron's explaining to Harry that Fred and George have been inventing these candies all summer that are like trick candies.
Oh yeah, they're hearing explosions out of their bedroom and like weird noises.
They were like, we thought that they just liked the noises, but no, they've been inventing stuff and it's really clever and like it's cool.
Yeah.
And Hermione is like,
oh Hermione, you're breaking about 100 house rules.
Oh my gosh. Hermione. And so they get unpacked, and they sit down to dinner, and it's just nice and homey, and Harry loves the Burrow.
Yes.
The Burrow's just great.
The Burrow is great.
So then they have to get up early the next morning to leave to walk to how they're going to get to the World Cup. Because Arthur Weasley explains on the way, which is a very long walk very early in the morning, that you can't just, like, have everybody apparating at the same time. Like, you have to have scheduled sort of times when they arrive and leave so that Muggles don't notice. But, like, I mean, it's like the FIFA World Cup, only it's been completely concealed from Muggles, so you have to also hide all of the wizards showing up.
And the kids can't apparate.
Right, and kids can't apparate by themselves, but they can apparate with...
They can side along.
Yeah, they can side along.
But because Bill and Charlie and Percy get to sleep in.
Right, Bill and Charlie and Percy can apparate, so they get to sleep in, but the rest of the kids have to go on the port key. So they get to the hill where the port key is, and they run into the Diggorys, who also live in the same neighborhood as the Weasleys. And Cedric Diggory, if you'll recall, is the Hufflepuff Quidditch seeker.
Also Quidditch captain, I believe.
I believe you're right. Very handsome young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Hufflepuff, so he's hardworking. Very smart, apparently.
Yeah, he seems to be pretty smart.
It says in the book that he's smart.
Oh,
yep.
I wonder why he's a Hufflepuff.
Because Hufflepuffs can be smart. It's just, like, about being loyal. It's about, like, what are your priorities, really.
Oh,
It's our choices and our abilities, Harry, that truly define who we are.
It's true. Okay.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Kind of schooled me.
Yay! One point for Emmy! This is like a fucking Quidditch match. 15-1!
It is the Quidditch World Cup.
It is.
It's happening
now. I just have to get the snitch, and then I can win.
Okay, so they go to a port key.
Yep.
Have we explained what a port key is?
I have not yet. I was going to say, Cedric Diggory's dad is...
Oh, Amos.
Amos Diggory is like, oh, ho, ho, Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You know, my son beat you in Quidditch. You remember that? You remember how he outsought you? And Cedric's like, Dad, Harry fell off his broom. Can you not...
Can you, like...
Be a dick about
this,
please?
Can you not, please?
And Amos is like, oh, ho, ho, but one falls off, one stays on. Doesn't take much to know who's the better seeker. And Harry's like, okay. And Cedric is clearly very uncomfortable because he's a... good young man.
Right, and I feel like Harry's like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, Harry's like, just like, he's was fighting Dementors and I beat Voldemort when I was 1 year old, so.
So.
I
can have this one little thing.
IDK, LOL, BBQ.
Yeah. That string of letters. So. Oh,
IDC. I meant to say I don't care rather than I don't know. Dang it. Alright, anyway, so they get to Porky.
Yeah.
Porky.
Am I doing the port key?
Yeah. I've been talking a lot.
So, a port key is, it can be any object, but it's, they put magical thingies.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's a magic-looking object.
So, you grab onto it, and...
At a specific time, I think?
At a specific time. Probably slightly before.
Yeah.
So you get a good grasp. And then they go off at certain times, and then they'll, like... They'll transport you to wherever you're going.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to the top of the hill and they find this, like, boot.
Yep.
And they say something about how, like, they had to be kind of clever with their port keys and stagger them. Like, they have to stagger the times that they get there.
Mm-hmm.
Also stagger the port keys everywhere and try and make them things that, like, Muggles wouldn't accidentally pick up.
Yep.
Because
apparently port keys work on non-magical folk, which I feel like is a loophole they should deal with.
Yeah, they should probably figure that out.
So they take the port key and it's, like, violently jerks them in a circle.
Yeah.
And spins them around.
Yeah.
It's not a very comfortable way of traveling.
No, it's kind of awful.
I don't think any of the, like...
There is no good way to travel,
because apparating
and
disapparating also feels weird.
Yep.
Flu powder feels weird.
I think, apparating, like, after a while... Maybe you just get used to it.
Yeah, maybe it's like a treadmill, where, like, the first time you run on it, you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
And then after that, you're like, oh, right. I get this.
Or like that first time when you run on a treadmill and you step off,
you're like
what
ah!
is the world?
Or like roller skating. Or yeah. any sort of, like, new mode of transport.
Right. It's weird at first, but then you just kind of get used to the weirdness. I think that's what Aberrant's like.
So they arrive at the campgrounds.
And a lot of stuff is happening at the campgrounds.
A lot of stuff. There's so much going on.
I think there's, like, a muggle taking money or something.
Yes, there's a muggle taking money for the campgrounds.
Yeah.
They had to rent a muggle campground.
Yep. And he's, like, super annoyed because all these people are coming up with, like, wizard gold. And he's like, I don't know. You're trying to give me fake money.
Yeah.
By the way, I think in the books, like, wizard gold is, like, the size of hubcaps.
He describes the gold coins as being the size of hubcaps. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
That makes no sense.
Because it, like, goes in bags all the time.
Yeah. I don't understand wizard money for that fact. Because if it's as big as a hubcap and it goes in the bags, and you, like, money should be easily transportable.
Yes. This makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because it also bothered me when I read that.
I'm really glad that it also bothered you. Because I was like, logically, this doesn't, I don't understand.
No.
And it bothers me. Unless they just carry around, like, backpacks all the time. But that's super weird. Like, hold on, let me grab my 50, plus they're gold!
Yeah.
That's gotta be super heavy!
Yeah, that would be really, really dense.
That'd be terrible.
And
that
doesn't
later,
make any sense.
When the leprechauns throw them out, that's dangerous. Exactly. Well, 15 people died, but it was
standard,
a cool trick.
Standard Quidditch World Cup procedure.
That's true. So there's a muggle taking money. He's, like, super angry, and they have to keep erasing his memory.
Because,
like, he keeps learning about wizards or, like, learning, like, weird things.
Because the wizards are supposed to show up in disguise, and they're just doing a terrible job of it. Like, they don't know how to dress like normal people, like muggles. Like, at one point, they see a wizard wander around in a nightgown, like a lady's nightgown, and another guy is chasing him, like, no, you're supposed to put on pants. He's like, no, I like a healthy breeze around my privates. I'm like, I understand that feel, sir.
Yeah, I get it. I understand.
So, they get to their campground.
Yep.
They meet up with the boys. And
they set up the tents, which look like just regular weird...
Yeah.
Which I think they set them up, and, like, Harry has to really help.
Yeah, because Arthur Weasley's like, we're gonna set this up by hand.
Yeah, like, we're gonna be, like, muggles.
Yeah, and he's like, go get some wood for fire, and we're gonna, like, use matches and stuff, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, really?
Everyone's like, can we just use magic, please?
Yeah, and he's like, no, we're gonna do this like muggles, because I'm part of the ministry, and so I have to set an example of, like, we're gonna camp like muggles, because that's what we're supposed to do.
There's this part in a Harry Potter musical where Draco Malfoy says, I'm tired, can't we just be Death Eaters? And when, like, I get to this part, I just always think of them being like, I'm tired, can't we just be wizards? Anyway. So they're going all muggly on it.
Yep.
And, Harry, like, painstakingly helps Arthur set up the tents. And they look like just regular tents.
Yep.
And he's like, how...
Like a two-person tent.
Yeah. And he's like, there are, what, like, 9 men? Boys?
Bill, Charlie, Percy, Harry, Ron, Arthur. That's 6.
For the twins,
George.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's
8.
8.
And then the 2 girls.
And then there's a separate tent for the 2 girls.
Molly's not coming with.
Molly does not come with. Sad.
That's weird.
Yeah. Why doesn't she?
I don't know.
Weird. Maybe she's just, like, not all that into Quidditch.
Maybe.
Although I feel like she would be.
I know.
Like,
it's Molly Weasley. Like, she's
first of all,
badass.
She's badass Molly Weasley. Second of all, like, her whole family is in it.
Right.
For, like... content, like, for family support alone, she should go. Unless maybe they don't have enough tickets?
But then why would you take Hermione? I'd be like, fuck you. Just because you're going to be our daughter-in-law
doesn't mean
you get to come with.
I want your ticket, damn it.
Oh, now I'm kind of having, like, a little, like, Molly Weasley being like, Ron, we're inviting Hermione. He's like, but...
Oh!
But I don't want to.
I don't want to.
I like her.
That's amazing.
There's 8 boys and 2 girls, and Harry's like, how are we gonna fit all of these people in essentially 2 two-person tents?
Yeah, that's insane. But then
he goes
into the tent.
Yep.
And it's like amazing.
Yeah.
Like
the size,
like,
of the
bedrooms. There's a full kitchen, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a whole dining room area.
Yeah. Lots of lounging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a fireplace inside.
I feel like there's a fireplace inside, yeah.
It's just, it's delightful.
Yeah.
It's what, I would camp all the time.
I would never own a house if I had a wizard tent.
No, why would you own a house?
Right.
Because you can just put, oh my gosh, you could put it in the back of a truck and then you could just drive your house everywhere, and you'd have, like, this amazing giant house on the back of a truck.
Didn't you basically just explain, like, mobile homes?
Yeah, mobile homes suck, though. They're not big.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Sorry.
You have to remember that I'm currently living out of, like, 3 boxes.
That's true.
4 now, because I picked up all my fall clothes from my parents' house. So,
oh,
I get to enjoy...
Now you have a quattro.
I know.
A quartet.
A quartet of boxes. My sad life.
I wish you had a wizard tent.
It'd be amazing. It's okay, I have a Prius. It's really close.
Sometimes it runs when the engine's not on, so I feel like that's pretty close
it's
to wizardry.
Every now and then it does, like, yeah, I pull up to a stoplight and I'm like, my car is dead. No, it's just running on battery. Magic! Arthur Weasley loses shit.
Moving on. Oh my gosh!
Hermione helps Arthur Weasley start a fire, because
mm-hmm.
Hermione's been camping. Harry has never.
And I think, yeah. Like, it takes her a while, too, because he, like, there's discarded matches everywhere,
yeah.
And she's like, whatever. Anyway, that's not a detail we really needed,
but. Then they camp that night, and then I think Quidditch matches the next day.
Yeah. Oh! They're camping that night, and Ludo Bagman comes around.
That's right, Ludo Bagman.
So, Ludo Bagman is, he works for the ministry, he works for, or he's in, like, the Department of Games and something.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he's like the head of...
I don't remember what it's called.
I can't remember either, and it's bothering me.
Department of Magical Games.
Is it just Department of Magical Games?
Maybe.
I thought it was Games and something else.
Oh.
But I could be wrong. Games and Foolishness.
Great. Perfect.
So he is walking around, just like, kind of greeting everyone. He used to be a professional Quidditch player.
Yep.
So everyone kind of, like, knows him.
He was a beater.
He was a beater.
For the... Something
for...
Bumblebees.
Some sort of bumblebee, because he's in, like, a yellow and black...
Yep.
Thing.
He's wearing his old robes.
Yep, his old Quidditch robes. So he's, like, coming around, talking to people, hamming it up. Also taking bets.
Yes.
So...
Oh my gosh, I am so glad you remembered that.
Yeah. I just really enjoy it, because...
You're just really, really good at this.
Thank you. I'm really glad that you're also a part of it. And, like, you're really... Like, you pick up on those things that, like, I totally... Like, whatever. And you're like, no, this is important. And I'm like, oh, that's right, it is.
Well, I was going to skip the whole betting thing, and then that would have been important later. I didn't even remember it, so, yeah.
So, okay, there's 2 teams, the Bulgarians
I don't remember what the Bulgarian team is named.
Oh, shoot. Their thing is the Vila,
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
That's
Bulgaria?
Awful. Bulgaria versus Ireland.
Yes.
Do they have, like, names? I don't think they're, like, the Irish leprechauns. I think they're just, it's just Ireland. No.
There's gotta be
a name,
team
because
things.
Because Ron's all about the
Chudley
Cannons. So glad that just happened. So happy. So it's Bulgaria versus Ireland. Ludo
yep.
Bagman is taking bets. Ron, or Fred and George decide
mm-hmm.
to get in on this, and,
they spend all of their
money. Yeah, Arthur's like, dude, like, maybe we shouldn't do this. And then the twins are like, come on! And then they're like, he's like, okay, but don't tell your mother.
Yes.
So then they give Ludo Bagman all their money and some fake wands.
Yes, that's right.
Because I think they make Ludo use one, and then he's like, those are hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. Twins
made,
were chicken, I think.
Yeah. So the twins, in addition to their candies, have made, these trick wands.
Yep.
That, so, like, Ludo waved it and it became a rubber chicken. Hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. And they, so they pool all their money. And
all
they
their money.
Bet Ludo Bagman that...
Yeah. Ireland will win.
But Bulgaria will get the snitch.
Yes.
And this is, like, laughable. Because the snitch gets you 150 points. And
yeah.
Every goal is 10 points. So that's, like, getting something that would be 15 points. I mean, even in a basketball game, there's rarely, like, that would be, like... Getting something at the end that gives you an extra 35 points. Just magically.
And it ends the game, so you can never,
yes.
like,
yeah,
get
you can't
ahead
catch
of
up
it.
To it. So, like, this is a ludicrous proposal.
Yeah, so they'd have to win by over 150 points.
Yeah, exactly. They'd have to be up by over 150 points.
Right.
For... And why would you catch the snitch if it ends the game, but you're down more than 150 points? This
exactly.
makes no sense.
Makes no sense,
but
they
the boys
anyway.
Bet it anyway.
Side note. There's this moment on 30 Rock. where
this is a side note.
I know, but Jack Donaghy brings one of the writers to a basketball game or a hockey game or something.
Mm-hmm.
and he's talking about how like awful it is because there's no real men around, like
mm-hmm.
to like because Jack Donaghy is very alpha male.
Yes.
So he's talking about how, like, there's no real men to bring around. They flash the scene of him and this writer at a basketball game, and the writer just goes, if the snitches were the 150 points, why does anyone even bother with the quaffle? And Jack Donaghy's like, why? And it's just like...
That's true! You can just sit on the ground and be like, Seekers, go!
Yeah, go have fun!
We'll be here!
I feel like chasers, though, want to chase.
Yeah, and beaters want to beat.
Yeah.
You could just chase the seeker with the... instead of, like... Like, the beaters could just go after the seeker of the other team.
That's true.
That would be much better use of your time.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we've gotten
off track.
As we normally do.
Take another break.
So then they make
that bet. Also, Barty Crouch shows up,
mm-hmm.
who also works for the ministry,
mm.
and who Percy
Thank
has
you.
Been working for.
Maybe
so Percy is
Percy.
So Percy's graduated from Hogwarts and he's working for Barty Crouch at the ministry and he is so proud. And you remember Percy is like very rule oriented. And so Barty Crouch shows up and is clearly like he's dressed in a suit. He's very much playing the part of like a muggle
mm-hmm.
As has been asked. And Barty Crouch is clearly not pleased with Ludo Bagman for sort of like gallivanting around and having a good time when this is like a giant security like concern and like we just have to be very careful
right.
and you know there's all these things to be handling that we need to take care of right now and Bagman's just sort of like whatever it's great to see all these wizards and wizards here and so Percy is like so excited to see Barty Crouch and hurries forward and says Mr. Crouch sir can I get you a cup of tea and he says yes thank you Weatherby and the twins lose their shit but like Percy has been so proud of himself for working for Crouch. Crouch has no idea who he is.
Yeah.
So Crouch and Bagman both head off to do other stuff.
Yeah, they just kind of leave them.
There's just like, you know, oh, there's a fight going on over here. Oh, there's, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, they hit, Harry, Ron, and Hermione hit the, like, gift shop stand market area.
Mm-hmm.
And, Harry buys leprechaun hats for both of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they buy, like, these omnoculars.
Yes. I would have totally forgotten about this part. I'm so glad you're
I mean, they're just, this is, I mean, Harry buys a lot of stuff for Ron and Hermione because Harry has a lot of money and Ron has sort of like a whatever about it.
And Ron gets a little statue.
Oh, yeah.
Of Victor Crumb.
That is not yet missing an arm.
Not yet missing an arm. So the seeker for the Bulgarian team is Victor Crumb. And,
One of the best seekers
ever. He's amazing. Yeah.
He's very young, too. He's apparently
very
only 18.
Young.
Like, just barely out of school, says Ron.
Right.
And so...
And so, while the Weasleys are all rooting for Ireland...
Right.
Ron still thinks that Victor Crumb is super cool.
Right, yeah.
So,
is also why the twins make the bet of, like, Ireland's gonna win, but Crumb's gonna catch the snitch.
Right.
Crumb's the best. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense, but okay.
Right, but fine, whatever. So they get a bunch of Ireland stuff and the omnoculars, and
which allow you to watch the game in slow-mo and it like,
Slow motion, they can zoom in everywhere, they're wizard binoculars.
They get labeled, like after, like if you're doing a replay, it labels the play
yep.
motion, so,
yep.
It's very, they're very cool.
The Wronsky faint.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And then I think that, also has like the players' names.
Yes.
So
there's also little rosettes that shout out the players' names.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they get a whole bunch of stuff, and yep. Ron's kind of like, thanks for buying me shit, Harry. Meh.
Yep. And Harry's like, I'm rich, dude.
Yeah.
Here's some money for remembering that.
Right.
That's a Scrubs reference.
Oh, okay. I was like, that's funny.
One of the, JP gets a raise and tells Turk, like, hey, you remember how I make more money than you? And Turk's like, yeah. And he's like, here's $20 for remembering that.
Right?
Anyway.
So, yeah, then game day. Game day arrives.
And Quidditch, as you may remember, can go on for months.
Yes.
Because it only ends when someone catches a snitch.
Right.
So it can just keep going on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
And on.
And on. So they get to the game. Oh, they go to their box.
Yeah.
And there's
they get to sit in the top box because they're with the ministry.
Yeah.
And behind them is an empty row.
Yep.
Except for the very end of the row where there is a house elf.
A house elf.
And Harry says, Dobby! Like, he thinks it's Dobby. And the house elf is not Dobby.
No.
Little
racist of Harry, but...
That's true. All y'all look alike to me. No, the house elf is...
Winky.
I was Winky, sir! I has been hearing about... Harry, you must be Harry Potter! I've been hearing about Harry Potter from my friend!
Yes. No.
Yeah, she's been hearing about him from Dobby.
Yeah, but, and she's a female, so she's got an even higher pitched voice.
Yeah, this is about as high as I can go unless I start heliuming it.
I don't have any balloons. No, also, she's panicking at this point, because she does not like heights.
I is Winky, sir! I is knowing of who Harry Potter is because of my friend Dobby! That was just me, like, getting into voice.
That was amazing. Yep, so that's Winky. She's sitting in the top box.
Out.
She's freaking out. She hates heights.
She's afraid of heights.
She's afraid of heights. But her master told her to wait in the box for her.
Save him a seat.
So
she looks at the empty seat next to her, and she indicates that it's for Barty Crouch.
Right. Do we know that it's Barty Crouch?
Yeah.
Okay. And Hermione is just super upset at this point.
Hermione's a little bothered by it, but it's not until the woods thing that she's
Right, okay. So she's like, that's kind of not cool because, like, your house elf is obviously terrified and you're making her stay up here because she's a slave.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that yet.
Right.
Although maybe she does.
I feel like she knows that part.
Yeah, but she's not, like, super upset about it.
No, not yet.
I don't think she's quite understood the pervasiveness of house elf use in the Wizarding World.
Right. Like, I feel like she doesn't realize the extent to which they can't disobey their masters.
This gets totally eliminated from the movie.
Totally eliminated. You don't hear anything about it.
It's so sad.
I know. It's
because it's a really great way of capturing how annoying Hermione can be.
Right? She can be so annoying. Like, Robert doesn't even know because he's only seen the movie.
That's right. Don't be deceived by the Emma Watson version of Hermione.
Because Emma Watson is gorgeous and smart and... not annoying.
How many times do you think when she was at Brown University, is that where she went?
Yeah.
That somebody was like, 10 points to Gryffindor anytime she got something
I heard that happen. That would be so... Like, I would be like, ha! Please stop.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it would even be funny the first time. It'd be like, I know. Yes. Thank you. Everyone watched me grow up on screen as Hermione Granger.
Can I just get my degree now, please?
Yes.
I think she said something in an interview about how she, like, came... Which kind of makes no sense to me, but she said she went to, or they asked why she went to an American school, and she said so that I would have more anonymity.
Ha!
But I was like,
that's adorable.
No. Honey.
That's not how.
No. That, no. Like, we have movies too. You're in them.
Those Americans.
Those Americans, they don't know anything.
We invented television.
Right? We're getting obese because of television.
Didn't
honey.
We also invent movies? Fuck you, England!
I think we at least got talking... Like, if we didn't invent
we definitely
movies,
invented
we definitely
talking
got
pictures.
Talking pictures before
what was the first talking
did.
Picture? Carrie.
I took film. I can't remember.
I would be the jazz singer.
Damn it! I knew that, too.
I knew it from Singing in the Rain.
Nice. I like that. I took film appreciation and... college.
Oh.
So, I know way too many things about film now. It's weird.
Now you know exactly the right number of things about film.
Okay.
So,
let's start learning, like, what, like, a best boy does.
We looked that up, because I sit through all the credits now in the hopes of a shawarma scene, which is now what I call them, and, and we said...
A shawarma scene?
Because, okay, at the end of the first Avengers... there's immediately a cut scene, so, like, the movie ends and everybody's happy and it's great. And then there's a cut scene that sort of, like, leads into the rest of the Marvel franchise where,
right.
like, there's, like, the space conversation about, like, it wasn't really about this thing, like, this is about a much bigger deal. And I forget the name of the evil character who's in charge of everything, which is terrible because I just saw Guardians of the Galaxy, I should remember his name. The evil guy, whatevs.
I can't remember. I'm
Stone face evil guy.
I'm more of a DC guy myself.
Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy?
I haven't yet. But just on an overall, like, on a comic book level,
okay,
even,
no. Yeah, on a comic book level, I agree with you. On a comic book level, I'm...
And, I mean, the Dark Knight trilogy is pretty high.
Yes, okay. But the way that Marvel
I have my problems with it, but continue.
The way that Marvel approaches making movies versus the way that DC approaches making movies. Like, DC is very serious, and Marvel has just, like, gone off the deep end of hilarity.
Right.
Which I love.
Yeah.
So I'm pro-Marvel. Pro-ish Marvel, because they still have some issues with passing the Bechdel test and having female characters. I mean, like, why do we still not have a fucking Black Widow movie? I ask you. Thor 3 is in production. Who the fuck cares?
I also question why we don't have a Wonder Woman movie. Because I'm fairly sure that Christopher Nolan could do it, and that one Marion Cotillard person would totally be Wonder Woman, which I wouldn't really enjoy,
Gina
but I'd deal with it.
Gina Torres is Wonder Woman from Firefly.
Well, first of all, I totally agree with that. But second of all, Marion Cotillard is in every freaking Chris Nolan thing. So
we could
she's
just not have Chris Nolan direct it.
Yeah, but he's kind of the king.
We could just have J.J. Abrams do it, and then lots of shit explodes.
That's true, but he's doing Star Wars right now, so we'll have to wait a couple years.
Wait, okay, let me... We could have a woman direct it.
What, Emmy?
There aren't any women directors.
Women directors? Next, you're going to be saying that women can, like, read and think.
Next, you're going to say they can talk in the movies.
They can talk in the movies without asking permission.
Anyway, where was I going with this? At the end of the Marvel movie, at the end of the Avengers movie. So there's that scene. But then if you wait all the way through the credits, if you remember when Iron Man falls back to Earth and like he kind of wakes up, he's like, do you guys want to go get shawarma? I hear there's a shawarma. I don't know what shawarma is, but I want to go get some shawarma. At the end, they're all sitting, like, all of the characters are sitting in a shawarma cafe that's been, like, totally bombed out and destroyed. There's a guy in the back, like, sweeping a little bit. And they're all just sitting around eating. And they're kind of awkwardly, like, they're not talking. They're just eating. And it's amazing.
I love
shawarma.
So
now
too.
I insist.
That makes me even happier.
I've never had shawarma, but now I want to someday.
I had in Israel, not to be that person. But.
Oh, you totally were just that person.
I was trying to really hard on
Schubenecker and Caroline?
No, I went my undergrad.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was awesome.
Good
choice. Kind of changed my life a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I don't feel like my story is as cool anymore.
No,
But anyway, so now every time I see, especially a Marvel movie, I'm like, we're going to wait for the shawarma scene. So we have to wait not only till, even if there's a cut scene... Before the credits, you gotta wait all the way through to the end of the credits just to see if there's anything that happens at the end.
Nice.
Sometimes there's not.
My dad. So, you know at Toy Story, how they ended it then? They were like, there's like a blooper reel at the end of the credits.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, my dad learned of that, and we went to see Toy Story in the theater, and he made us sit through all of the credits to get to the blooper reel, right? Which he calls clips.
Yeah,
like the clips
sure.
at the end. So now, like, every time we go to a movie, my dad, he's like, should we stay for clips?
Oh, that's so cute.
And I'm like, there's
you know,
probably not clips at the end of The Giver,
they used
but
to...
thank you, Rodney.
That's
like
I mean,
one
that's,
of my favorite
That's
things.
Why movie trailers are called trailers, because they used to come after the movie. They would trail the movie. Of course you know this, which is a film appreciation.
Well,
where were we?
I have no idea.
Top box.
I would just like to say that we have talked for an hour, and we're on chapter, like, 4 of
the
book.
Here's the thing, though, is I've reread the book, and literally, like, I'm halfway through, and I'm at Beauxbatons and Durmstrang.
That's true. This does take a while.
It takes a really long time.
Yeah.
The movie cuts it really short.
And I remember reading the book and being like, when are they going to get to freaking Hogwarts already?
Yeah, right.
Anyway. Top box.
So, top box. And then the games, well, and then the teams are introduced.
Yep.
And, the Bulgarians are introduced first. And, their team cheerleaders, mascots, whatever.
Mascots,
are
I think they're
Vila.
Called. Vila.
If you'll remember, there are certain cores to wands. Vila hair is another core that Ollivander does not use.
No, because it can be temperamental.
You are so good. So good at this. Just, oh, awesome. So, Vila are female-like creatures that, when they dance, sort of have a mermaid-like effect, I would say. On
they're like sirens.
Them. Yeah, there's...
Yeah.
Yeah, they're exactly like sirens. How about you just do this podcast by yourself?
No!
Can I just...
That would be way less entertaining.
That's true.
And, like, I would be sitting here and be like, there's these things, and then this happens. I have no side commentary. It'd be the worst podcast ever. I don't know, just read the book. It's way better. So
the Vila dance when they come out, when the Bulgarians are announced. So, like, again, remember, this top box is full of people cheering for Ireland, but the Vila are dancing. And Harry suddenly is like, why am I cheering for Ireland? Clearly I should be cheering for Bulgaria.
Yeah.
Like, I can feel, like, it just, it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Also, I need to do something really amazing right now. I think I'm going to springboard from this top box into the stadium.
Because that will really impress the Vila.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think Hermione grabs his arm.
I think it's either Hermione or Arthur Weasley.
Right, because Arthur's covered his ears.
Yeah.
Because it's apparently also when they sing, that's really what does, like, the dancing is part of the singing, the singing is really what gets you.
Yeah.
So Vila, again, have a siren-like control quality over the people that hear them.
And Arthur laughs and says something about, like, how, it, like, young boys that have never, like, experienced it before or something, like,
they're particularly susceptible to it.
Yeah. Which I find funny, because then, like, Hermione and Ginny are standing there, like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Why are you, yeah.
Do you suppose...
I was just wondering that same question, I'm pretty sure,
Do you
I don't
suppose
know.
That there are, like, female, there are, like, girls at the Quidditch Cup who have just been, like, super hyped up about Quidditch their whole life, and they're, like, 14 to 16, and they're, like,
so glad you're asking
super into the Vila dance, and they're all looking at them, like, they're suddenly going, oh, shit. I'm gay.
I'm totally gay.
I'm totally gay for Vila, which probably means I'm gay for regular people, too. And there's also probably there's younger men who are going, like, why am I not into the Vila? Oh, shit.
Oh.
I mean, this is, of course, assuming that sexuality occurs on a binary, which it doesn't. Sexual attraction occurs on a scale, so there's probably some people who are like, I'm sort of into the Vila.
Right.
And those are, like, the pansexuals and the aromantics and...
Bisexuals.
Right.
I can just, by the way, like, just see a t-shirt that says, I'm gay for Vila.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm so glad you brought that up, because
I want to do a queering the Harry Potter. I want to get together other, like, gay Harry Potter fans.
That would be awesome.
And just do, like, let's just queer
You could have
Harry
a
Potter.
Whole huge thing on Dumbledore.
Well, you'd have to talk about, like, the issue. Like, Dumbledore is never referenced in the books as gay. It's only
right.
that J.K. says afterwards,
right.
like, oh, yeah.
Did I tell you about that interview I, like,
no.
saw with her?
No.
Okay, so,
no.
two time out, so, this,
side note.
Side note, but deal with it, because it's interesting.
Take a drink.
So, take a drink. There's an interview, I think it was when J.K. Rowling was actually talking to Daniel Radcliffe. They, like,
okay,
kind of just talked to each other about
that's
it.
That's cute.
Yeah, but he said something about, like, what, or something about the whole Dumbledore is gay thing.
Yeah.
And she said what happened was there was a scene in a movie that they ended up then cutting, but she had she read the scripts or whatever, and in it, she said that Dumbledore said something about, like, a past beauty that he loved with, like, raven hair or something, and she wrote, Dumbledore is gay in the margin. And the director was like, oh, okay, like, we'll just take that scene out.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. And then everyone was like, bleh, Dumbledore's gay, that's so wrong, whatever.
Right.
And, J.K. Rowling said she wrote, or she was like, which is part of the reason why she started Pottermore, is she said, like, she knows her characters so well, or whatever.
Mm.
Like, she knows everything about them, but it's not necessary to reveal everything about them to a story. So she was like, she's like, I know the entire backstory of McGonagall, which I thought was gonna make it into a book. It doesn't. It's on Pottermore, and it's amazing.
I'm not on Pottermore, and I think I need to be.
Oh, you so need to be.
I think
just for the McGonagall story alone, like,
okay,
it's just
the
beautiful.
Reason that I'm not on Pottermore is I was, like, upset by the whole sorting thing, because people were like, I got sorted into such and such, and I don't think I should be there, and they, like, had existential crises because they were sorted into...
That's dumb.
And I was like, I don't want to be... What if I get sorted into Slytherin?
It is our choices and not our abilities that define us.
Thanks, Dumbledore.
By the way, I know good people that were sorted. Like, I think, like, Dan Nelson and Evan Albright were both sorted in Slytherin.
Oh, I like those people.
Right.
Okay.
I'm a Gryffindor. Laura Laughlin, I don't know if you know her, but she's a Ravenclaw.
You've mentioned her before, but I don't know her.
Okay, well, she's a Ravenclaw.
Okay. Well, she sounds cool.
She
good
is.
Good job, Laura.
I totally thought that I was going to be a Hufflepuff, because I'm always a Hufflepuff.
Right?
But I was a Gryffindor. Anyway, so she was talking about how part of the reason that she's at Pottermore is that she knows so much about her characters, but, like, it never really seemed apt to put it into the story. Mm. So she's like, I always knew Dumbledore was gay, mm-hmm. but it never really seemed to, like... Like, there was never a time of Harry and Dumbledore talk about sexuality. Like, there was never, you know?
Right.
But she said that she wrote in the seventh book, this won't really spoil anything.
Okay.
His relationship with Grindelwald.
Yes.
Like, she was like, I wrote that in such a way, or she was like, I hoped to write that in such a way that adults would be like, I think there's something more going on there.
Yeah, that didn't come off.
But kids would be like, they're just best buddies, you know?
That didn't
Which
come off.
Which totally didn't come off at all, JK, like, sorry. But
there's some really torn feelings in the, like, the queer community about Dumbledore's sexuality.
Right.
Because it's like...
Which I'm, like, I mean, I'm not gay, but, like, I'm curious as to what people think about that, because...
Well, there's some people that are like, oh my gosh, yay, like, one of the best characters, awesome. And then there's also this sort of, like, but we never actually find it out in the books. And, like, that's the only one, like, of all the characters in the books.
Right.
There's, like, 400 and some Harry Potter characters, a significant amount of whom we hear the relationship status.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are gay.
No.
In the movies, like, no one ever, like, when they go to the ball at the end of this book, or in the middle-ish, like, no one, there's no, like... Oh, and Seamus and Dean really wanted to go together.
Oh,
and McGonagall totally supported them because McGonagall's awesome.
McGonagall would totally support them.
Right. So it's just sort of this, like, invisibility
And there's
thing.
No, like, and, like, Dumbledore doesn't have a relationship.
Right.
You know, like, there's no, like, gay, like, actual gay relationships.
Right.
Like, there's one character that supposedly identifies and never says
right,
something that
exactly.
way. But, like, yeah.
So,
I gotcha.
So there's some torn feelings in the community.
You should totally start a,
So
like,
I
want to
do,
queer
yeah,
theory.
Like, queering the Harry Potter, like... but sometimes queering things goes really off track.
Yeah.
Really quickly. Actually, when I say sometimes, I mean, like, 82% of the time.
Yeah.
I love you, queer people. Please don't. I'm gonna get my card revoked.
You totally are.
I'm gonna get home, and all of my polar fleece and flannel will have been removed from my closet. They will just have left dresses.
They will have left dresses and makeup.
They will have taken all of my sensible flats.
All you're gonna have are, like, stilettos.
Fucking heels.
You won't even get wedges.
Heels everywhere. That's right.
You're not even gonna get wedges.
You will lament this day. Never again will you have comfortable footwear. My Prius has been replaced by, like, I don't even know. What is straight girls drive?
A Jetta.
Oh my gosh.
A Volkswagen
totally
Jetta.
Replaced by a Jetta.
It would be a Jetta.
Good joke.
Thanks.
Well done. We should get back on track.
I have no idea where we are. I think we're still at
the
top.
Vila.
Oh, we're to the Vila.
So after some of the young wizards have realized their sexuality in accordance with the Vila, they get hauled off the field. And the Irish...
Like, literally hauled off
the
field.
Yeah, because they're definitely trying to, like, seduce the crowd and the referees and... Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're... I don't remember who drags them off. They're, like, dragged off.
Some of the referees with, like, their fingers in their ears, like,
yeah.
hollering at them and calling
Probably
them.
Probably Odysseus with wax in his ears.
Good reference.
Thank
Lashed
you.
To the mast.
Yes.
Yep.
Anyway, so then the...
No, he's lashed to the mast, and all of his rowers have wax
oh,
in their ears.
Oh, that's right.
So that he can hear the siren song.
Right.
Which is kind of a dick move. Don't
well,
you
kind
think?
Of, but doesn't... Well, yeah. But he says something about how, like, he needs to, like, you need to hear. Like, someone's got to hear when
I
you're,
guess.
Like, in a ship. Something's happening.
Oh, okay.
You
sure.
know?
That, okay.
So then he's like, tie me up, otherwise I'm gonna
okay.
do things.
I thought it was just like, I want to go hear the sirens, so tie me up and you all put wax in your ears.
Oh, see, I thought it was like...
Sure, he can be noble. We can tell it that way.
I thought he was noble, but, I mean, he's the hero of the story.
Yeah, but he's not a very noble hero.
No.
He kind of sleeps around with, like, a lot of people, and then he gets back, and his wife is like, hi, I've been super faithful to you for, like, 20 years.
And he's like, yeah,
me
too. Totally.
I'm just going to hit the doctor real quick before we, you know.
Just real quick. Also, what's up, son?
That's the sound of us veering off track. So the Irish team comes out, they're all announced, there are leprechauns flying through the stadium, and they're showering gold on the attendees.
On the crowd, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, if it's wizard gold at the size of hubcaps,
yeah, there's
that's
no way.
Gonna do some damage.
There's no way. So Ron is super thrilled, because now he can pay Harry back for his hat, and he's just, like, super happy.
Yeah, so he's like, here's, like, a ton of gold, plus some extra.
Yeah.
Which Harry puts in his bag.
Yep, exactly.
That apparently can hold hubcap-sized coins.
Yeah. It could be bagged with an extendable charm, I guess.
That could.
Anyway.
So then
the game begins.
The game begins. They're playing.
And they're, they move so quickly, you don't have time to, like, the announcer doesn't even have time to say more than the name of the person holding the quaffle before it gets passed again. Like, it's just...
It's
seamless, yeah. Speedy.
It's amazing Quidditch.
Ireland is crushing it.
Yeah.
They're up, like, 60 to 10 within a few minutes.
Right.
They're just amazing.
And Harry is viewing with his omnoculars, and to understand the game more, he, like, puts it all in slow motion. And then he's, like, watching... Like, I think it's Moran
has
the quaffle.
I think so.
And then they say, like, someone else scores.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's like, but Moran has the quaffle. And Hermione's like, if you're going to watch the game in slow motion, you're going to be behind Harry. And Harry's
such
like,
a sass.
Whatever, Hermione.
Yeah. You don't even understand Quidditch.
Why are you even here? yeah. And then, And Victor Krum does this awesome thing called the Wronski Feint.
Yeah, where you just dive straight at the ground.
Where you just dive, yeah, straight at the ground. Think so that the other seeker thinks that you see the snitch.
Seen the hitch.
And then, but then at the last second, like, before you hit the ground, you basically pull up.
Yeah, exactly.
Fly all cool, like.
Yeah, and
I think
the other
they're
person
also
smacks into the ground.
All on firebolts.
Yes, they're absolutely all on firebolts. And they just look amazing.
Which is neat, because Harry's like, I have one of those. Me!
So,
the game's awesome.
I don't remember anything else about the... Is there anything...
At some point, Victor Krum gets hit with something, and
then
he's bleeding everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, his nose is just gushing blood.
Yeah.
Like, actually, I think it's his entire face is just,
yeah,
like...
There's just... And there's, like, blood flying behind him as he flies.
Yeah. But he's like, whatever, I'm standing.
Yeah.
I don't think they have, like, all...
No,
there are
alternates, but
yeah.
Victor Krum's like, no, I will persevere.
Right.
And I think that's when he goes speeding off down the field.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, I think he's seen the snitch.
Yeah.
And so at this point, Ireland is up 160 to 10. No, excuse me, 170 to 10. I do believe. And Krum catches the snitch.
Yep.
Which again... gives the team that catches it 150 points and ends the game. But that means that Ireland has won. They're up 170
right.
to 160. But Krum caught the snitch.
Those twins.
Oh, Fred and George.
Oh, Fred and George. And I think one of the... Or I think, like, Ron says, that idiot, why did he catch the snitch when they're so far ahead? And Harry's like, he knew they weren't going
to
catch
up. Yeah, he said he wanted to end it on his own terms. He knew that they'd never win. Which I'm like, That's a lack of confidence in your own team.
That's
right,
like,
there.
And like, way to take it into your own hands. Like, screw you guys, I'm just catching
right,
a stitch
yeah.
and ending this.
I feel like that's a team decision that should be made. Like,
right.
Time out, let's just quick talk this over. Guys, we're screwed.
Yeah.
Just go catch the snitch. Cool. But no, he just makes a decision on his own.
Right.
Foolhardy. He would have been sorted into Gryffindor.
He would have. So then the game's over.
Yay.
They go back to their tent.
Yeah, and then...
And they're, like, celebrating and stuff.
Oh, yeah, because...
People are freaking out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like Canada after, you know, someone wins a hockey game, like, you know, cheering, shouting, happy, happy, happy. Yes. And so then everybody, you know, eventually, after a long time, they go to bed. They can still hear, like, the sort of the Irish camp cheering and celebrating. And then... In the middle of the night, they wake up and they're still hearing, you know, these cheerings and shouts and screams.
Yeah, they're hearing a bunch
and
of shouting and screaming.
Freaking
and
out
like...
sounds? And Arthur Weasley, like, gets up and leaves and is like, I think he says, does he say stay in the tent?
I think so.
Because
I think, maybe that's just the movie.
And they go outside, I don't remember exactly if they, whatever, but Harry, Ron, and Hermione follow Arthur outside. Arthur disappears to go deal with something, and they see... off in the distance, there's a crowd of people, and above this crowd, which is cloaked in black cloaks,
with
above this
creepy
crowd,
masks
yeah,
on.
With creepy masks, that's right, I forgot, there are four figures in the air, four human figures, two of whom are small, and it is the groundskeeper, his wife, and their two children, and this crowd is magically putting them in the air and dangling them upside down.
Mm-hmm. Are they conscious?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
I can't remember.
Yeah, because they have to have their memories modified.
All right. Which is a horrifying sight to see. Like, yeah. They're basically being tortured in front of their eyes. Like, they're just dangling in the air.
Yeah. And they're they're muggles. They're terrified. You know, they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And Ron reacts really strongly to this sight, and he's like, that's what a Death Eater looks like.
Yeah.
Like, and Harry and Hermione are like, okay, we have no idea, because we weren't raised in the muggle world, and we've never seen pictures, and we're freaked out.
And do they even know what a Death Eater is? In the book?
Yeah, I think by that time they know what Death Eaters are. Death Eaters were,
Voldemort's followers.
Yeah, Voldemort supporters. Who like to torture muggles, just for funsies.
Yeah.
So, I think Harry, Ron, and Hermione just run away. I don't remember exactly why they run into the woods, but they end up in the woods, and,
I think, like, everyone's kind of running into the woods.
Yeah, they're just freaking out. They run into Malfoy. Malfoy's a dick, as usual.
Yep.
And basically says, like, you need to hide her, and points to Hermione, and they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they're coming after muggles, it'll be her next. And they're like, Malfoy, suck a lollipop, you're a total jerk, and she's, like, the best witch ever, so whatever. And then he disappears, and then Harry realizes he can't find his wand. So in this all this running around, he's lost his wand, and he feels, like, totally naked.
Yep.
Because he's, you know, there's this giant wizard crisis going on. And then...
And he doesn't have his wand. So then they hear something weird.
A very low voice.
A very low voice. And I don't remember. I don't think they understand exactly what he says, but they hear...
Hermione recognizes it.
Oh, she does.
Because it's Hermione.
Well, of course. So they hear this low voice, and then see in the sky there's a skull,
mm-hmm.
With a snake coming out of its mouth.
Mm-hmm. Very creepy.
And I didn't think that they knew what it was.
I think one of them knows, because they're like, we need to get away from here. It's either Ron or Hermione.
Okay, well, one of them knows what it is, and they're like, yeah, they say, we need to get out of here.
It's the dark mark, we need to leave.
Yeah, but I don't think they get away.
No, they, like, barely make it out of the... Because they're in the woods. It's been shot up from just behind them, so they're running away from it towards the clearing. And when they get to the clearing, like, a whole bunch of wizards have apparated there.
Yeah.
And are pointing their wands at them and are, like...
There's a bunch of, like, ministry officials.
Yeah.
All standing in a circle, basically, around them, pointing their wands at them, because the Dark Mark has just been...
Cast.
And the Dark Mark, is Voldemort's kind of, like, symbol. And it's, always above, or they always found it above the place where a Death Eater or Voldemort killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the scariest things ever, mm-hmm. because, like, your greatest fear was to come home and see the Dark Mark. Mm-hmm. Like, just terrifying to see it.
Yeah.
And then people think that, like, there were people killed.
Right.
So they're freaking out.
Well, they want to know who cast it, because the only person who knows how to cast it, I think, is a follower of Voldemort.
Right.
Now we know that followers of Voldemort did escape imprisonment after Voldemort's fall.
Yes.
Malfoy's father being one of them. Those people claimed to have been sort of, like, hoodwinked into following him, or they turned in a lot of other witches and wizards who were part of his team to, or sort of shorten their sentences. So people who followed Voldemort all are out in the world, wizards who did, but, this kind of gathering and that sign being shot into the air is completely... Yeah, they haven't seen that since the reign of Voldemort. Which ended 14 years ago.
Yeah.
When Harry defeated him by being a baby. So, ministry officials have their wands pointed at Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and then Arthur's like, whoa, hi, I'm here. Everybody stop, that's my son.
Yeah.
And, they're like... No, the Dark Mark's been cast. I think Barty Crouch is like, excuse me. And
yeah,
Arthur's like, okay, you're trying to tell me that either my son, Hermione, or Harry Potter cast the Dark Mark? And Barty Crouch is like, oh yeah, probably not.
Yeah, probably not Harry Potter.
And they go digging around in the woods. I think they've shot a bunch of stunning blasts into the woods. And so they're like, maybe we can knock the person out. So they go dig around. They can't find a body, but they find a wand. And Harry's like, hey, it's my wand.
And they're like, this is your wand? And he's like, yes.
Yeah, I kind of dropped it.
I dropped it? So. And they're like, sure. And they make it cast its last spell, which was the casting of the Dark Mark. And so then there's this whole, like, Harry Potter probably wouldn't cast that kind of deal.
Yeah.
And
which, that whole thing is kind of cool when they're like, make the wand, like, do its last thing or whatever, and then, like, a faint image of the Dark Mark comes out.
I believe the spell for that is Priori Incantatum. Or is that the... Is that the two fours? Oh, okay.
I believe so.
I believe you.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
I mean, not to, you know, but...
No.
I feel like that's
do
the
it.
Connection. Anyway.
Then...
So...
They find...
Yep.
Winky.
In the woods.
The house elf. Of Barty Crouch.
Who finds her?
I don't remember.
I feel like that's an important detail, but I don't remember why or who it is.
It's not Barty.
Anyway, someone finds her.
Someone finds her.
And then Barty's like, what? And somehow... She gets blamed
for the Dark Mark. Right, well, she's the only other one who was in the woods.
And she was close to the wand or something.
Right, yeah.
So they're pissed because she took a wand.
Which she's not supposed to... House elves aren't supposed to have wands.
Right.
And that she cast the Dark Mark. And Hermione is now starting to get a little worked up about this. Because she's like, no, we heard the voice of the person who cast it, and it was very deep, and Winky's voice is very high!
That was good.
Thank you. And... You know, there's this whole, like, why isn't she allowed to have a wand? And they're all like, Hermione, shut up.
Right.
And Barty Crouch is extremely angry.
Extremely pissed.
Which is terrifyingly so. And says, my house elf has disobeyed me. I told her to stay in the tent. And she ran. This means clothes.
Yes.
If you remember from book 3, when a house elf is granted clothes, that means they're freed from slavery to their masters, which for Dobby was great. Winky is sobbing.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't want to be put out. She does not want to leave her family. So this is a horrible, like, this is torturous
this
for her.
This is, like, big punishment for her.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's...
Plus, I mean, to be set free, like... She's gonna have to go out and, like, find a place to live.
Right.
And, like, find a job, probably.
Right.
And, like, I don't know.
I don't really think...
What...
I was excused from my family for possibly casting a Dark Mark.
Right.
With a stolen wand from Harry
probably
Potter.
Probably not the best on your resume.
No, exactly. Terrible reference.
You can call my last masters, but...
Technically, when they call your... I mean, when they call your last place of employment, all they can say is, yes, they were employed here, unless you list them as a reference, and then they can talk about your character.
Oh.
It's a whole, like, lawsuit thing, because basically people were calling and be like, hey, did they work here? And the manager was like, yeah, and they were terrible, and then they would sue the manager.
Oh.
Be like, you're not allowed to say that I'm terrible just because I was. So now you have to list them as a reference, and only then can they be like, hey, how were they as an employee? And they'd be like, well, fine, I guess.
They were an employee at this establishment. How were they? They were an employee at this establishment.
They are no longer working here. What does that tell you? So, Winky is released and is just heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
Hermione is very distressed by this. Barty Crouch is very, like, removed from the whole thing. Like, he's just seething with anger. And then I think, like, he frees her and then storms off into the woods.
Yeah.
So
then I think everyone starts freaking out and wants to go home.
Yeah, everybody wants to leave right away.
Which is kind of an issue because they have, like, because they had planned a, much like their arrival, which, fun fact, if you had, like, cheaper tickets, you had to go earlier, like, a couple weeks early so that all the arrivals were spread out.
Right.
All the departures were also spread out like this, but everyone now is like, there is a freaking Dark Mark in the sky.
Right.
I'm leaving.
And the Death Eaters were out again.
And the Death Eaters were around, so...
But interestingly, the Death Eaters all disappeared as soon as the Dark Mark appeared.
When the Dark Mark appeared in the sky, all the Death Eaters were like, catch you later!
Yep, bye! Which makes
bye.
No sense.
Yeah, because they... You'd think they'd be like, woohoo!
Yeah, he's back!
Yeah, but they were like, oh!
Yeah. This will be explained later.
This will be explained later. Hopefully we will remember to explain.
We're awesome.
We're totally cool.
So they go back to the Burrow.
They go back to the Burrow, and Percy is like thinking himself way more important than he is, and spends all of his time at the office. Arthur Weasley actually does things all day at the office. Like, they're working crazy hours because the Dark Mark has happened.
Right.
And,
No, everybody wants to buy, like, amulets and things to protect them, and a lot of them are total lies, and so then his department is trying to control things.
Right. And everyone's just kind of more on edge.
Yeah.
Harry,
Ron, Hermione, Ginny, and the brothers, I think, play some, like, 3-on-3 Quidditch.
Yep.
Which is cute.
They just kind of hang out.
They go to Diagon Alley and pick up stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything special happening.
I feel
happening.
Like nothing really special happens in Diagon Alley. Which is strange, because normally things do, but...
One thing does happen. When Molly Weasley lays out all of their clothes to take to school, she puts...
Yes.
A dress with lace in with Ron's clothes. And he says, Mom, you've given me one of Ginny's dresses. And she says, no, those are dress robes. And he's like, what the hell?
Yep.
And she says, you need dress robes this year for school. And he says, it's like lacy and musty and disgusting. And she's like, well, it's a hand-me-down.
Yeah. I had to buy used. So.
Yeah. And Harry has some that are basically just look like his school robes, only they're a dark green.
To match his eyes.
Yeah.
Because Mrs.
Ron's
Weasley
like,
went to Diagon Alley for them.
Right.
When they were at the Quidditch World Cup.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Ron's like, why does Harry get nice ones? And she's like, well, because he has money.
Because Harry has money, bitch. Oh,
yeah.
That's not what she says, but I feel like that's the tone.
well, I mean, you've got to, like, it's just kind of suck to be the parents of kids that hate that they're poor.
Right. And then to have, like, a super rich friend. Like, I think, and Harry feels awkward.
Yeah, Harry
too.
Does feel
like
bad.
Everyone's just kind of in a really awkward situation.
And he mentioned several times that, like, he always wants to give the Weasleys money and they won't take it.
Right.
But
she says, like, you'll need dress robes this year. And Ron's like, why do we need dress robes?
Oh, yeah.
And all freaking summer, Percy and I think Arthur and I think Bill and Charlie know
it's
too.
Mostly just that they
but
started doing it now. That they've started nagging them about it.
Yeah. But they've started, or they're always talking about how, like, oh, but, like, it'll be a special year at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And, like, when something happens at Hogwarts this year.
Yeah, Bill and Charlie are
and,
like, oh, it's too bad we're not at Hogwarts anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we might come back and visit just to watch. And they're like, what?
They're like,
watch what?
Watch what? Potions? Like,
yeah.
What? I don't understand. And by the end of the summer, Ron's like, what is happening? Why won't you just tell me? And Bill and Charlie are like, we might see you this year.
Yeah.
And Rod's like, I hate you guys so freaking much.
Yeah.
In that, like, I love you, but you're being super annoying way.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can be with family.
Yeah.
Then
they go to the...
Then they go on the train?
They go on the train.
Do they have cars this year? I feel like they get there some way special, but I could be wrong, and it doesn't really matter.
I don't remember.
Context
nothing
of the story,
nothing
so.
Happens significantly with getting on the train.
No.
They just get on the train.
So they go to, and then they get to Hogwarts.
Yep.
I believe the kids are sorted.
Yeah, they ride the horse-drawn carriages.
Oh, yeah.
They ride the horse-drawn carriages by invisible horses up to the castle.
Yep. And, fun fact.
Yay!
So then all the first two are getting sorted, and the hat starts singing its song, and Harry's like, that's a different song than
I
heard first year.
I don't
have it memorized either. He's like, that's a different song, and Hermione's like, it's a new one every year, and Harry's like, what? And then Hermione was like, oh, I guess you've never heard a Sorting Hat song, because the second year you showed up
in a
car and came in after the sorting, and then last year you showed up and McGonagall took you away
right away. Right, exactly.
Or Snape. No, McGonagall.
McGonagall.
Yeah, took you away right away because you were all dementory.
Yep.
So, you've never heard that before. And it is my sneaking suspicion that J.K. Rowling was like, I want to write another fucking poem. Like, I don't want to have to write a poem about what the Greek houses are.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to rhyme.
Year.
So, yeah. And then I think one of them makes a joke about how, like, well, are they like, it's a new one every year? And they're like, well, what else are you going to do if you're a hat?
Yep.
Like, just sitting around for a year.
A sentient hat just sitting around on a shelf. One year you get to help out in the Chamber of Secrets, but that's it.
Yeah. And you don't even, like, he's not really, like, the hat's not even really animated during
I can't really hat. It's just,
And then, I mean, and then, you know, sometimes you have Harry Potter's barging in and asking if they really should be a Gryffindor,
right.
But
get your greasy head out of my hat.
Exactly. Plus, it doesn't have any hands, so it can't write anything down.
Yeah, it can't
so
do anything.
It would have to, like,
memorize its poem.
You'd have to write and memorize a poem simultaneously.
Yeah.
I could not. I would be so confused.
I think you just recite it to yourself over and over and over again.
God, I would hate to be that hat.
Yeah, that would be difficult.
Yeah. Oh.
No.
In a Harry Potter musical.
Good.
/ a Harry Potter sequel. They have the sorting hat, but they also have the scarf of sexual preference. So you get sorted into your house.
Do they really?
Yeah. And so, like, they just mention it in the Harry Potter musical, but it actually makes an appearance in the Harry Potter sequel. And, like, so Harry is sorted into Gryffindor and everyone freaks out. And then they put the scarf on him and he gets sorted as metrosexual. And then he goes and joins Hermione and Ron. He's like, what'd you get sorted into? And Ron goes, bicurious. And Hermione goes, waiting till marriage. And Harry's like, no, houses. And they're like, oh, Gryffindor.
That's amazing.
And like Dumbledore calls him Scarfy the whole time. And he's like, right, it's awesome.
Oh,
that's anyway.
Great. That's great.
Scarf
I'm
of
so
sexual
I didn't know that.
Oh, so good. Anyway. Those are so great.
I like that the scarf of sexual preference covers like sexual choices as well, like waiting till marriage. Like
right.
That's a very expansive view of sexual preference. I
it
like
is.
That. So they're in Hogwarts. And then so the first year gets sorted. And Dumbledore stands up to make an announcement, which he says, Quidditch House Cup is canceled this year.
Yeah, and everyone's like,
what?
Not
no.
cool, bro.
What? No.
Yeah. STFU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
WTF STFU.
Right. And a little bit GTFO.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hearty yes to that.
yeah, so he says that those are canceled.
Because, I don't remember if there's anything else that he says about it.
I don't think so.
This is because the Triwizard Tournament will be reinstated.
Yes.
And there's some people are like, oh my gosh! And some people are like,
what's going on?
What is that? So the Triwizard Tournament is a competition that used to happen between the three wizarding schools in Europe-ish area.
Mm-hmm.
Hogwarts, Durmstrang, and Beauxbatons.
Mm-hmm.
Guess where Beauxbatons is located?
Most likely France, but they don't know for sure.
Exactly. No, they don't know where any of the schools are located because they're all hidden.
Because they're all, like, in weird competition with each other. And
yeah.
They're like, we don't want you to know where our school
is.
You'll
and,
come
like,
and
steal our
pranks.
Secrets or something. But so the Triwizard Tournament was supposed to be this time when, like, all three schools got together and it, like, encouraged the spirit of international cooperation.
Right.
Which I don't really feel like getting a school together and having students compete against
like,
each other.
Like, seriously
is.
Compete against
yeah.
each other.
And, like, it was eventually canceled or postponed indefinitely because of all the deaths.
Because a bunch of kids died
yeah.
in the tournament.
Yeah.
They're like, maybe we shouldn't do this anymore.
Yeah. But so they've now put in some new rules that will hopefully, Dumbledore says, you know, kind of create protection and avoid any nasty dismemberments.
Also, fun fact.
Yes.
Dumbledore, I read this article one time that talked about how Dumbledore reinstates this because he knows what's going to happen and that we, like, that wizards are going to need international support. And so he's like, hey, Voldemort's getting stronger. Maybe we should, like, have some alliances going on.
Right.
Anyway.
But it's actually because of the...
Right.
Well, I guess he would have gone
I mean,
anyway.
I think,
yeah.
yeah.
So, in the middle of all this announcing, the back door bursts open, and in clumps,
Mad-Eye Moody. So, in, yeah, clumps is a good word, because Mad-Eye
Moody. That's how I chose it.
Very nice. So, if you remember from last year, Remus Lupin, one of the best people ever.
Yep, top 10.
Top 10. Was the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, but he left because he's a werewolf, and people don't want werewolves teaching their kids, and because the position is cursed. And
yep.
so...
No one ever stays in that position more than a year.
Right. For reasons that will come up later.
Yep.
So...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they, have a new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and it's this dude that's clunking in, named Mad-Eye Moody.
Mm-hmm.
Alistair Moody. You're
great.
He's an ex-auror. So what an auror is they're a dark wizard catcher. Basically, they're like wizard police, but badasses. They're like wizard FBI.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Do it anyway.
I can't think of the name. The West Wing. I think it's Butterfield. Oh,
can't help you.
Anyway, he's a super awesome, like, Secret Service guy.
Great.
I think his name is Butterfield. He makes me happy. I haven't watched the show for a couple weeks,
I've never seen
it. Really? I got really into it.
I know. It's a really good show, I've heard.
It's a really good show. The thing is, though, is that, like, I started binging it, and it is not a binge show.
Oh, okay.
Like, you gotta take some space in between, I think. Because, like, there's moments where you're like, no, I can't stop! And those are good. But then there's moments where you're like, I can stop.
Okay.
And then you end up stopping for, like, a month.
Ah.
Sorry, back. Okay, so Mad-Eye Moody, ex-auror.
Yep.
He has a peg leg.
Yeah. I think it's specifically a wooden leg, like it's carved.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
like
carved.
Like a chair leg.
Right. And then I think he has a staff.
Yes, or a walking stick.
Or a walking stick of some kind. And then he's like scarred everywhere.
Yeah.
And just looks like beat up as all get out.
Raggedy hair.
Yep, raggedy hair. But the most curious part of him is he has this huge magical eyeball in his head, where his eye should be.
Yes.
Like, he has one regular eye that's, like, beady and small and, like, kind of always suspicious.
Squinting. Yeah.
But the other one is a bright blue, like, it has a bright blue iris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, whizzing around constantly. Like, it's, like, turning
mm-hmm.
all 360 degrees, like, constantly
yeah,
moving
looks
around.
To the back
of his head, looks to the back of his head. And it's his magical eye that can see, like, everything.
Yeah, we determine later the magical eye can see through the back of Moody's head and through wood, at least.
Yeah.
So.
So he enters all dramatically, and then does he just join the
head
table?
He just kind of walks up there, and Dumbledore's like, hey, great, this is Mad-Eye Moody, he's going to be teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts.
And everyone's like, okay.
Good luck, sir.
I'm gone for a year.
So, yeah.
Oh, but I wanted to say here, because our dear friend Robert has only seen the movies.
Okay.
And in the movie, the Triwizard Tournament happens, like, right now.
No. Incorrect.
But
I mean,
that,
it does in the movie.
It does in the movie. That does not happen in the book.
No.
People. Like, there...
It begins on Halloween.
Yeah. Like, Dumbledore's like, hey, there's no Quidditch, the Triwizard Tournament will be happening.
Right.
But we have school to do.
Yeah.
Like... But it's going to happen later on in this year.
Yep.
Which the movie is just like, nope, it's happening now.
Yeah, they just, like, bust in the doors. So, yeah, classes happen.
Yep.
Snape is
like
a dick in potions, as usual.
Yep.
This year they have to all learn how to do antidotes because he's threatening to poison them.
Snape.
Things are getting really intense in all of their classes, and the reading assignments have really stepped up, and they complain, and McGonagall's like, you are taking your ordinary wizarding levels... OWLs, or OWLs.
Yeah.
Which I think is supposed to be sort of a parallel to whatever big exam they take in England at some point.
Right.
We don't have those in America.
Well, it's kind of like the ACT, I guess.
Sort of, but those are voluntary.
Right.
Or
pretend they're mandatory.
Yeah. Pretend they're mandatory.
And, like...
And that your job, like, whether or not you get a job is sort of based on your scores. Like,
right.
Not even college stuff, but, like, people care. At all levels.
Exactly.
Like,
our ACT scores kind of don't matter after a while.
Mm-hmm.
They, like, super matter.
Yeah.
And they're...
She's like, those are coming up, and they're like, that's not coming up to the end of our fifth year, and she's like, yeah, you gotta start learning now.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
So things are getting really intense. Do we want to go into Moody's lesson on the...
Yeah,
three?
We should do... Yeah, we have to. I mean, I think we should...
Okay.
I think...
I'm just wondering how...
Here's my proposal.
Much further we're going
Let's
to.
Let's do through Moody and then the lesson, including poor Neville, and then through Beauxbatons and Durmstrang arriving. And
because
then,
that's how far you read.
Yes.
Okay.
Or we can just get to, like, the arrival day and be like, and in the next book, in the next podcast, we'll cover the arrival. What do you want to do?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. Well, I was actually thinking in my head, like, it's mixed up in my head, so we can go all the way through Durmstrang and...
No, it's fine, we can do it your way.
Okay. I mean, we don't have to do it my way.
We can do it your way.
This is not my podcast, I mean, this is our podcast.
I think your name goes first, though.
Because it's alphabetical order. By first name.
I know, but I... Whatever, let's just do it up until the arrival, but not at the arrival.
Okay. Okay, so classes are getting more intense. And then they're hearing, or Ron and Hermione and Harry are hearing all about Moody's classes from their other people. Like, Fred and George are like, his classes was amazing. Yeah. Like, this dude is awesome.
Yeah.
So they're, like, super stoked for their class. And then I think they get upset because it's, like, not till the end of the week. And I think, is it with the Slytherins? Maybe not.
No, it's not with the Slytherins.
Okay.
Potions with the Slytherins.
It's always potions with the Slytherins. Mm-hmm. I don't know who makes class schedules, but they're like,
they need to stop. Yeah.
Let's put Harry Potter with the teacher that hates him the most with the students that hate him the most.
Brilliant!
Yes! So they go to Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yep.
And Moody is just like... Like, he can see everything. I think the gum thing does happen in the book. Perhaps? Where, like, Seamus is doing something, and he's like, you need to find a better place to put your chewing gum, Seamus.
It's actually, Mr. Finnegan. In the book, it's...
But I can't remember.
Lavender Brown is showing Pavarti her star chart for divination under her desk. And he can see through the desk and says, you need to put that away.
Yep.
Miss Brown or Miss Patil. I don't remember which one it is.
I don't remember which one.
Patil.
But I think he's even, like, facing away from them.
Yes, and then so eye sees through the back of his head and through the desk.
Yeah, and everyone's like, meh!
Yeah, creepy.
He can see everything! And so he... So Moody's philosophy for teaching is that they need to know what's out there.
Yep.
So he
Because they could be attacked at any time. Constant vigilance!
Constant vigilance!
Constant vigilance!
That's Moody's thing. There are three distinctive things about Moody that come up all the freaking time.
Does he have a lightning bolt shaped scar on his forehead?
No, but do you know who has a lightning bolt shaped scar on his forehead?
I don't know if we've covered that.
Harry Potter.
What?
I know.
How did he get it?
It all occurred the night that he miraculously lived.
Oh.
When Voldemort attacked him, killed his parents.
Wow.
So,
is that what they call him, the boy who lived?
Yes. Harry Potter is a very unusual teenage boy. Because he is a wizard.
What?
Yeah. He has...
We did not cover that!
He has untidy black hair. He has green eyes. He has a lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead. A lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead. A lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead. And, yeah. And he survived... What, like, the most evil...
Of all curses,
from one of the most evil, powerful wizards of all time, when he was, like, an infant, and no one knows why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have been...
I was just doing that, too. End of July.
3 months old.
Yeah. Or a year and 3 months.
Oh.
No, one... No, you're right, 3 months old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So,
much like Harry's lightning bolt-shaped scar, Moody has distinctive qualities. One is the crazy magical eye.
Right.
And then, like, the rest of his physical...
Appearance.
Two, he's always saying, constant vigilance! Because he's super paranoid. Because he's been through some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
PTSD.
He has severe PTSD. Mm-hmm. Like, before Dumbledore hired him, he probably should have been like, can you go talk to Dr. Drew for a while?
Yeah, exactly. And can you just work out some of your stuff?
But no, because it's Dumbledore, and he's like, ah, you'll be fine. It'll probably be fun for the students, and Harry Potter's here, so no one's learning anything anyway.
What's happening at Hogwarts now? Education.
Education, because
Harry's not here.
So he's all, like, he's super paranoid, talking about how they need to be constantly vigilant against the evils that could be around them.
Yep.
And then third, because he's so paranoid, he's always drinking from a hip flask.
Oh, right, so no one can poison him.
And so he...
Forgot about the hip flask.
Oh, yeah.
So smart.
So he constantly has his own supply of liquids. And I think he always prepares his own food, too. Because he's like...
I think so, yeah.
People are going to poison me because I'm paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
All
of these statements are accurate.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So in their constant vigilance, he decides to show these fourth years what they're up against.
Yes.
So he shows them the three unforgivable curses.
Right.
They are so named because they are unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
The first he shows is Cruciatus?
Yes.
So he has spiders.
Oh, no, Imperio, I think, comes first.
Yeah, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because the, yep. So, he has three spiders on his desk, which then he makes larger.
Mm-hmm. Ron is not enjoying this.
Ron is tweaking out. I think he actually, like, pushes back in his desk.
Yeah, and exactly. Hey,
And so the first one he shows is the Imperious Curse, so you say Imperio. Mm-hmm. And basically you can control the wizard.
Yeah.
So, you can just tell them what to do. Yep. And they'll do it. So, like, he puts it on the spider and then has the spider, like, dance around the room mm-hmm. and, like, do all these amazing things that spiders can't normally do.
Yeah.
And he's, like...
He tap dances for a while.
Yeah. And he's, like, it's poisonous, but you can't... Or is that just in the movie?
That's just in the movie.
Okay.
But he says, like, he does in the book, everybody's like, oh, it's funny. And then he's like, yeah, except I could make it do absolutely anything. I could make it throw itself down one of your throats.
Yeah. And then Ron's like, meh.
Yeah. Ron's like, oh, no, thanks. We're
no, thank you, please.
So then he says, what other unforgivable curses are there? And Neville Longbottom.
Does he practice it on her? That's later.
That's later.
Okay.
I'm going to go through them and then do the Neville thing and then go back.
Okay.
And do another lesson. So he says, you know, who else knows the another unforgivable curse? And Neville Longbottom raises his hand, which is, like, very unusual. And Neville sort of stammers out, there's a the Cruciatus curse.
Yes.
And, Moody looks at him and looks at his class just and says, your last name's Longbottom, isn't it? And Neville says, yes. And there's this kind of, like, moment where you're like, what is going on? And then nothing happens. Like, he just moves on to, he curses the, one of the spiders, the Cruciatus, and the spider is, spider screaming and, like, writhing in yeah. pain. And, Hermione cries out, stop, stop. And you think it's because Hermione's got such a tender heart, which she does, but she's not looking at the spider, she's looking at Neville, who has just gone completely white.
Yeah.
So, there's some backstory that we've not yet unlocked there.
Yes.
And so Cruciatus inflicts terrible pain.
Yeah.
And then there is...
And then there's a third curse,
mm-hmm.
the Killing Curse.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you say Avada Kedavra,
yep.
and... There's a flash of green light, and whoever you're pointing at dies. So, Moody kills a spider.
Yep.
And then very dramatically says, there's only one person known to have ever survived it.
Yeah. There's no way to cast off a Avada Kedavra.
Right.
He also notes that, like, you have to be extremely powerful to use it.
Mm-hmm. Does he say at this point that you have to have the emotion behind it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like, you can't just be like, Avada Kedavra! Yeah, because he says... All of you could say Avada Kedavra right now and nothing would happen
to me. Yeah, I'd barely get a nosebleed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you need, like, the emotion, the force mm-hmm. behind it to
yep, exactly. make it work.
Yeah, and then he says only one person has ever been known to survive it, and that is...
He's sitting right in front of me.
Yeah, he's sitting right in front of me. And everyone's like, Harry Potter!
Harry Potter! Kid with the lightning bolt chip scar is for it. That kid right there.
That kid.
So, next lesson... Moody's like, well, I'm going to train you how to deal with these curses if they ever get used on you.
Right. Probably not Avada Kedavra.
Yeah, right. That one we'll skip.
We're probably not going to go over them.
Yeah,
so, but he starts, so he puts them all under the Imperious Curse.
Mm-hmm.
Which, question, what is the mystery doing? Because, like, shouldn't they be, like Dumbledore, like, should someone have questions
Moody
as to
claims,
what's going on?
Moody claims that Dumbledore wants the kids to know it.
Okay.
So none of the kids report it. And
I'm just like, there's three unforgivable curses. Let's try them out.
Here's a question. Now, Robert's seen the movie, so he knows the spoiler
right.
inherent in Moody's existence.
Right.
So here's my question. Is... Does Moody actually have authority from Dumbledore to perform these, or is this just Barty Crouch Jr. fucking around?
I feel like it's him just fucking around.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's him testing Harry.
Right.
For Voldy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's see exactly how good he is, and then
right.
we can, yeah.
So, he starts putting students under the Imperious Curse and making them do things.
Yep.
Like, crazy things. I mean, not, like, bad things, obviously,
I think
like,
Seamus hops around the room singing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Neville does gymnastics.
Yep. Which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So then, and then it's Harry's turn,
mm-hmm.
and we get to actually hear, like, Harry's inner monologue, because
yeah.
we're privy to that, because it's...
Because it's third person.
Third person, it's, like, selective, but it's
yeah.
not. I think, yeah. Anyway, it's third person point of view, but you're following one character.
Yeah.
Third person restricted?
Third person particular?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
I should know this. That's bad. Harry gets put under the Imperius curse, and I think right away he feels really happy. Like, he's like, yay! Like,
blissfully happy.
Life is good! And then, he gets this thought that says, jump onto the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's, at first, is like, okay. And then he's like, wait. Like, why would I need to jump on the desk?
Yeah, that sounds dumb.
Yeah, but this thought is like, jump on the desk. He's like, but no, like, why would I do that? That's dumb. And it's like, jump on the desk. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to. And then he, like, jumps and his knees hit the desk, I think, and he, like, falls over.
Yeah, he both jumps and tries to prevent himself jumping.
Yeah.
So he just
rams into the desk super awkwardly and falls over. And Moody's like, Potter did it!
Yeah,
like,
good job, Potter!
Yeah, which is probably counter to what he is really thinking. But, so,
right.
Yeah. But Moody says, look, you guys, Potter fought it. Like, I told him to jump on the desk, and he was trying to stop himself from doing it. And that's really difficult to do, so, like, good job. And then I think he, like, keeps practicing on people.
He makes Harry do that four more times until Harry can completely throw it off. He practices on Ron enough that, like, Ron can't stop skipping after class.
So, like, Harry's able to, like, completely not have the Imperius curse. And then other people are in, like, various states of...
resistance.
Yeah. It's like learning Greek. Like, some people, like, super know Greek, and some people are like, I know two words. But we all advanced.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
So they all advanced. Just
throwing off the Imperius curse is exactly like knowing...
exactly like learning
ancient
Greek.
Biblical Greek.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Thank you. So that's
pretty much it.
That's pretty much class.
And then one day they get to the Great Hall and there's an announcement that, like, hey, Beauxbatons and Durmstrang are arriving on October 30th.
Yeah.
And so they're like, ah, okay, cool. Everybody, like, the whole castle gets, like, cleaned and...
yeah. All the, like, Filch goes crazy.
Oh, fuck. The fucking house elves.
Oh, mother of all that is.
I'm sorry, I just swore twice. I didn't mean to.
Should we explain the house elves and then wrap this one up? The knitting.
Okay, I got it.
The knitting!
Oh my gosh, the knitting. I don't think the knitting's happened yet.
She learns how to knit in the summer, doesn't she?
No. I think it's over Christmas or something.
Okay.
Because it hasn't been mentioned yet in my reading.
Okay.
Hermione's really worked up about what happened to Winky, and then figures out that house elves work in the... Hogwarts kitchens, and she loses her shit.
Yeah.
Like, how dare we, and we're like, this is slave labor that makes these meals, and, like, makes our beds, and stokes our fires, and cleans our house. Like, no, this is absolutely not acceptable.
Yeah.
And so she starts the camp, she's, like, been reading in the library a lot, and does all the studying, and starts this campaign to advocate for, house elves' rights, which is called... SPEW for Society for the
Elvish Welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Promotion of Elvish Welfare?
Yeah, I think so. Society for the Promotion
which
of Elvish Welfare.
Which is not SPEW.
No, it's SPEW.
Which clearly J.K. Rowling was like, I'm going to make it SPEW, but
right,
Hermione's
exactly.
not going to want it to be called SPEW.
Because she's Hermione. She's the best. She's the worst.
She's just
so annoying.
So
she's just like, she's lecturing people all the time about... everything. She, like, wants everybody to buy buttons and join SPEW.
I think she, like, forces Harry and Ron to join.
Ron and... she tells them they're... Ron, your treasurer, and Harry, your secretary. Like, she doesn't even give them a chance to debate it. And they give her... they buy the buttons from her in the hope that she'll leave them alone, but then she starts harassing them by, like, wearing them, and she's just really intense.
Yeah.
So that's happening as a background to all of these things. More to come.
Yeah. So just know that Hermione is trying to create this thing for elfish welfare.
Right.
SPEW. And that everyone else, like, no one else cares.
No one else is into it.
And I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I understand that they're, like, I don't know.
No, I mean, like, Fred and George say
Fred and
they're
George
happy.
Are, like, they're happy there. Like, Fred and George are like, we've gone to the kitchens to steal food, because of course Fred and George have. And he's like, they're happy down there, like, they give us food freely, they're, like, singing and stuff.
I
they are the happiest of creatures.
Yeah, to some extent this plays off of, you know, like, this might play differently in England, but in America we're all like, oh, slave labor, this
right.
is awkward.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think one of them makes the point, too, of, like, they are living in the castle, mm-hmm. they have food, they have, like,
yeah.
you know, they have everything they need.
This is what they want. And she's like, that's because they're brainwashed and uneducated.
Right. They're like, oh, Hermione.
Hermione's the best. Hermione's the worst.
She's the borst. West?
She's the West. So that, yeah, and so then it's October 30th, and the classes all get out an hour, half hour early, everybody gets changed in their cloaks and their hats.
Yes.
Important note, the movie skips this all the time, but they wear pointy hats with all their cloaks.
They do in the first and second yep. movies, and but then they just
costuming just gave
it.
Up after that, and I was like, I know they look Which, dumb.
The pointy hats look dumb.
But... Whatever, they're cute on little tiny Harry and Hermione.
They are cute in the beginning, but can you imagine, like, fifth year Harry with a no. pointy hat on?
With his hockey mullet.
Right.
Ugh. I guess we're glad. But so they all assemble in their black cloaks outside, waiting for the arrival of the Durmstrang and Beauxbatons students.
I feel like we should end it there. I
yeah.
feel like that's a good cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So, next week, we will... continue on to Goblet of Fire Part 2.
Yep.
And we will meet the new students and see how they arrive.
Yep. Same bat time, same bat channel.